Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, we're just in Florida. I didn't see how the panhandle actually up near the we're in the Gulf of Mexico. In fact, I was just going to check the weather. We almost had our show interrupted yesterday by a thunderstorm. So let's see what's going to be today. Oh, yeah, thunderstorms. By 8 o'clock, 100% chance. So, yeah, we're going to have some storms during our show. So I just want to warn you, if you're listening live and all of a sudden we're not there anymore, it's probably because we had a lightning strike nearby, which tends to happen a lot around here. So, yeah, it looks like we're going to get some there's a lot of rain. In fact, I think it's raining all day today. Yeah, well, it's Florida. I love it. It's such a contrast from California because we had nothing but drought. You know, I mean, it didn't rain for 5 years. And to go from not raining to 5 years to, you know, when I first got here, like an inch one weekend and another inch of rain 2 weeks later, it's quite a contrast. It's really interesting. But the soil is so sandy and soppy, it just kind of sops it all up, and it works out pretty well. Although there are problems. We have new housing developments, but that we probably shouldn't have. We've got things that are built too quickly that probably shouldn't be. We've got all kinds of flooding problems because, you know, people want to develop too fast, and it looks like contribute to our county commissioners too fast, then we got a problem. So we're going to talk about that. That's why I brought Angie Carter onto the show to talk Mondays, and we're going to deal with that. We're going to deal with a bunch of other things. But that comes under the corruption heading of our campaigns, candidates, and corruption, our new show that started last Monday, and that's going to keep going. So Monday's lineup is going to be very interesting. We're going to have at 7 in the morning Central Time when we start, it's going to be Jonathan Mosley with the Legal Report, then 8 o'clock Cindy Cagle, and then 9 o'clock Angie Carter, Cindy with the Medical Freedom Report. So it's things are changing. Things are busy around here. It's been quite an amazing time. Probably one of the most amazing, speaking of which, shows was yesterday. Now, I know our schedule is screwed up. Friday is the last day we're still at 6 o'clock, which is early. Yeah, the only benefit of Friday at 6 is that my weekend starts an hour earlier. But even then, since I work most of it on the show for the shows for the next week, it's a relative term. But it's really fabulous to be able to, well, first of all, switch to the 7 o'clock hour, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Now, Thursday's different. Thursday is 10 in the morning Central Time, and we do that for a couple of reasons. One, because everybody likes it now, and two, because we have Judy Mikovits on the West Coast. And if we started at our normal 7, you know, that's 5 o'clock her time, which means she's up at 4. And I don't want to do that to anybody. She's busy enough. And so we make that show specifically later just because Judy's on the West Coast. And so that – but it worked out fabulously yesterday. Now, yesterday we had one of the super guests. You know, we're climbing, I guess, I don't know, the social ladder, the political ladder, the guest ladder. You know, as we work our way inevitably to Donald Trump and getting him on the show, it's only a question of time now. And that's really encouraging because you look at the folks that have been on. We've had some amazing people. We had Josh Whitehouse on not too long ago, who was in the Trump administration. His job was to go to the Pentagon and drain the swamp there. Fabulous guest. The doctors that we have on, Doctors Mikovits, Artist, Thorpe, Marble, Dade Eckert, John Cullen, who made the COVID map for Johns Hopkins University. You know, those folks are all geniuses in their field, you know, and so the ability to have them on the show. And then of course, now we have Brandon House. Now, Brandon House, if you don't know him, you probably know some of his work. I mean, he does WVW Worldwide News. He does radio. He does TV. And that's a Christian broadcast network for the most part. And I'm just learning about Christian media. So what folks don't know, you know, you think, you know, Fox News, and if you're, you know, conservative, Newsmax, sort of conservative Newsmax, you know, if you're really conservative, One American News, and you think that's kind of it. But there's this whole world of Christian media. You know, it's like Christians have been set apart, not by our choice or by Christians' choice, but simply because that's the way the world is. It's like the secular atheist, you know, world that tries to deny religion, you know, this bogus separation of church and state nonsense. Well, it's not an isolation of church, you know, and the you know, the transfer of God to government, you know, state. But that's what it seems to be. And it's quite fascinating. So we went through some amazing topics yesterday with Brandon, who related, you know, why the deep state, why the globalists, why the elitists believe they're special. that they have some special place in history, that they have some of their own God, their own religion, their own, you know, Babylonian descended, you know, counter Christian, opposite Christian, possibly Satan inspired, you know, somehow religion. It was fascinating. You have to listen to the show yesterday. I mean, he did this in great detail. He only intended to stay for half an hour. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. Nobody stays here for half an hour. And then to have him stay an hour, almost an hour and a half, was just incredible. Now, what Brandon House is probably best known for, like I say, you may not know, you know, him specifically, but you know what he's done. He's the one that produced Mike Lindell's election films. And so those wonderful election documentaries that Mike Lindell produced. Is Brandon House. I mean, he's the one that did that. So, you know, me, I'm thinking, okay, well, we managed to get Brandon on the show. And he spent with most of the people that were on yesterday. It's kind of funny. Brian Artis, Judy Mikovits. Judy actually brought him on. So between Judy, Brian, Jim Thorpe, Ben Marble, they all know each other. So the activists in the world, the one thing that the deep state has done, probably against their will, they've divided the world, or at least the United States, they divide the United States into you know, compliant and resistant. And I am firmly in the resistant camp. Obviously, if you listen to my show, you know, anytime at all, you realize this is a show about resistance to tyranny, resistance to the deep state, resistance to the Brandon, you know, insurrection, the installation of a moron into the White House who will say anything and actually believe it. He probably even believes he's president. Now, the Democrats know he's not. You know, the Democrats, they may talk about this, but they know he's not. The Republicans know he's not, too. And how do they know? Because they're the ones that put him there against the will of the people. The correct election result, and I'll be happy to talk to Donald Trump about this when he does finally come on the show. Well, I didn't say finally, but when he does. The actual election count is 316 to 222. That's the electoral count, you know, if you count the Trump electors that were disqualified by the traitor Mike Pence. And so this is what the real situation is. Now, you don't hear this all the time because the media sucks up to the deep state because they want to get they want to be able to cover them. And quite frankly, I don't care. So if you're in the FBI, KGB, you know, and you're listening and you want to call the show, 215-383-3832, love to hear from you. If you want to be anonymous because you can't, you know, come out here directly and identify yourself, we always have our live chat. And so you can give yourself some kind of cutesy name like, you know, domestic terrorist or something like that, so we know who you are. I mean, that would definitely help. Anyway, so that's where we stand now. And but Brandon, like I say, because he's, you know, best friends with Mike Lindell, you know, my next object is to get Mike Lindell on the show. Well, Mike Lindell knows Donald Trump, so of course we go from there to Donald Trump. And we just kind of work our way up, and we'll get there. But I think it's going to be the dream come true of me. To be able to talk to Donald Trump directly and talk about citizen legislation and the impact this is going to have on the 2022 midterms and the effect it's going to have on the 2024 general and presidential elections. And so, well, they have primaries then too, but the presidential election is going to be huge because we already have an entire agenda. We've had it for years. In fact, I haven't been able to do as much bill writing ever since WEBY was bought out and I was fired. Because, well, that happens. When a station buys, you know, it's not, well, it was kind of me, but, you know, point being that once a station's bought out, they generally get rid of everybody and bring in their own people, much to the chagrin and upset of the audience, simply because the new people brought in are generally more generic and, you know, and boring. And that's what happens, you know, because they're conforming to whatever, you know, consultant-driven, media-driven, ratings-driven things that they're told to say. I don't have that problem. Do I have ratings? Absolutely. You know, am I driven by them? No. You know, I do. If there's only one person listening, I do the same show because it's about the principle. It's about the quality of the show. Now, of course, that's not going to happen because I don't care, because I am doing the best show I can, you know, for the most people, to create the most freedom for the most people. Naturally, we get more and more people, which brings me to our newest listeners in Australia, Canada, and the UK, as they say. So the Great Britain, England. Across the pond, we've got a lot more listeners over there, which is absolutely fabulous news. Yes, it is. So it's growing. The English speaking world, the British Commonwealth, or let's just say the Commonwealth of Canada, Australia, and England, has audience has like quadrupled just in the last few months. And this is really great because I want to make connections there too. We've already had Jen Clark on from Australia, where we wrote an Australian Bill of Rights, Bill of Individual Rights. That's still circulating around Australia. That's on our website, writeyourlaws.com. You know, go to legislation and click down to all proposed laws, and that's where you'll find it, okay? We also have a bill that our most recent and probably our most powerful bill ever is a constitutional amendment to remove the power of Congress to borrow money. that would solve almost every problem we have in this country right now. Because it really, you know, you look at inflation, you look at the printing of money, you look at the power of Congress, you look at the ability to dominate the states, the ability to, you know, hold funding over the states. All these powers, you know, come from the ability of Congress to borrow money. Now, Jefferson warned against this. He said, don't let him borrow money. It's going to be a problem. And that's exactly what happened. And so you take away that power, you know, and then the national debt slowly gets paid off. The national debt can't be increased. It can only be decreased because Congress can't borrow money. The influence of China and other nations that own our debt will gradually lessen as the debt gets paid off because we're not borrowing any more money. Okay, so this is the single most powerful bill I think that's ever come out of Action Radio. And it's the first one I want to talk to Donald Trump about. Because if he likes it and that becomes a major part of his campaign, which I hope it will, everything changes. If we start writing, you know, the bills for Donald Trump's campaign, I mean, think about that for a second. Think about the implications of that. You know, maybe I'll be a White House talk show host or at least have him on a regular basis. And it wouldn't be like an interview. You know, what do you think about this, Mr. President? It would be more of, well, here's our latest bill. You know, can we help you? Or what bill do you need? Or maybe I can get Donald Trump to write a bill on Action Radio as part of his campaign. You know, I know Brandon's never written a bill in his life. I've written more bills than Brandon ever will already, even before I started the show, you know, 5 years ago. So, you know, I've had a little practice of this, and you know, that's how I developed the ability to make a very simple format for anybody to follow to write a bill. You know, you have an introduction or a rationale. You know, you explain why your bill is important. You put the old law, you know, the things that you're changing, and you'd be very specific with this, you know, because our bills are very simple, very straightforward, very elegant in their simplicity, if I dare say. But because of that, the single subject, they're easily understood by anybody. We're not writing bills for lawyers. We're writing bills for people. Congress writes bills for lawyers so they can wrestle over it. We write bills for people, and that's the difference. And so as we write bills that anybody can understand, you know, people can then give their consent to be governed by approving or not approving these bills. And then as they send them to the various legislatures, that's how it works. You know, that's what Action Radio is all about. Okay. So that's it. So we're working our way, you know, up the political chain, the guest status. You know, I'd love to have Steve Bannon on, for example. I mean, all these people I want to have on the show. I really believe it's only a question of time, you know, and just because of what's happened so far. You know, Matt Gaetz should be coming back to the show, our congressman here. You know, he's where I send my bills first because he's my congressman. Right, so I definitely want him on the show. And I don't always agree with him. Listen, trust me. we've had some, I mean, it's never been really a disagreeable discussion, but I've had challenges for him. You know, why can't we do this kind of thing? And so that's why it's really critical for him to come back. And so as this grows, as we become the go-to source for the ideas of the Republicans, of independents, of even some Democrats. You know, I mean, listen, our bill to get rid of the income tax during the time you're earning your standard deduction, you know, Democrats can just as easily support that because it helps working families as Republicans can support it because it's basically a tax cut. You know, you're getting your withholding, you're not having money withheld, so you get it now, you get it this year. So in other words, instead of waiting a year for your money in a refund, you know, it's not taken in the first place. You know, so the first year this gets implemented, you'll have last year's refund plus this year's non-withholding. You know, so when that gets passed, that's going to be a big deal. Of course, the following year is going to be a little different. But once people realize how much money is being withheld for taxes, I intend to, you know, inspire a tax revolution and we get rid of the withholding tax completely. And of course, taxes should then drop after that. I mean, that's the plan. You know, and I'm not telling anything that the Democrats and socialists and the leftists don't know. I mean, you know, it would take them a nanosecond to look at that bill and go, oh, he's trying to get rid of all withholding, you know, in regards to it. And the deep state Republicans, they're going to want it too. They're going to want their withholding. And so interestingly, when I proposed this on WBY, most people like their withholding. Well, how can I won't be able to pay my taxes if it's not taken automatically from me. Well, that's interesting. All right. Kind of a powerless thing for them. All right, I need to take a quick break for a second, so I'm going to play just a couple of things. Where's my Brandon? My PSA, my Brandon Dark Winter. Yeah, it's a place right now because I need to. Otherwise, I have to mute myself, and it's going to be embarrassing. So let me just play this, and I'll be right back.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns. No representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
All right, so we have a lot of things going on. Derek's not going to be with us today. He's got an amazing story, of which I want to talk to him about before talking about it on the air. And so he won't be with us. So we have a little extra time. So we've got from 7:30, so we've got an hour and a half at the end of the show. So that's when I'll be talking about more about the Plyler v. Doe case. Just to give you a little bit of information about that case, Plyler v. Doe is the reason that we have illegal aliens in our schools, because there's no reason for them to be there. In fact, part of the best ways, I'll be talking to my Florida folks about this, part of the best ways to get illegal aliens out of the state of Florida is to deny them the ability to steal an education from the taxpayers and to take places in the public schools, you know, the government schools, when American citizens and legal immigrants and full permanent residents should be there. I mean, those are the people that have rights in this country, you know. And even then, legal residents and immigrants, until they're citizens, have limited rights, can't vote, can't serve on a jury. And people don't realize how important that second part, serving on a jury, is, because juries are where laws are decided. Juries are who's, you know, allows laws to continue being put into effect by either upholding them in the case of a crime or nullifying them in the case of a not guilty verdict, not guilty by reason that the law itself is wrong. And we've talked about that before. We're going to talk about that again. But those are critical things of not being able to. And this is another one of those problems with New York trying to let, you know, illegal aliens vote in their elections, is that they put on the jury rolls too. Do you want to be judged by an illegal alien? I don't. especially if it's an illegal alien on trial for a crime. You don't think there's a little conflict of interest there? What if the crime is being an illegal alien? You'd have an illegal alien on the jury? I mean, God, this is ridiculous. Anyway, so we'll talk about that. So Plyler v. Doe, very simply, is a case where in Texas they were going to charge illegal aliens $1,000 a year per kid for you know, taking the taxpayer burden by basically stealing money from the state of Texas to educate people that have no right and no ability to be here. And the Supreme Court comes along and says, oh, no, you know, this is the Brennan, you know, court. And some of the most leftist judges that ever served on the court, you know, said that, well, illegal aliens are people. Well, okay, we're not disputing that. Of course, they're people, you know. But as people, they have rights under the Constitution. No, they don't. Citizens have rights under the Constitution. You know, all the people of the world do not, and that's a huge difference. And so, what the Supreme Court got wrong was they confused citizenship jurisdiction with geographical jurisdiction. That's the same reason people are illegally awarded citizenship for being born here to illegal alien parents. Well, the 14th Amendment is very specific. It's a citizenship jurisdiction. You only get American citizenship if you're not under the jurisdiction of another country. That's what the "and subject to the jurisdiction thereof" clause means. Okay? So let me read it exactly just so I get this right, because I'm not good at my memory. You know, I'm good at making up stuff. I'm just not good, you know, in arguments and things like that. I'm really not good at memorizing anything. And so let me just get it here. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, okay? That is a citizenship jurisdiction. And you know what's citizenship? Because it talks about being born or naturalized, okay? Born or naturalized is a citizenship criteria. Therefore, this is citizenship jurisdiction. And it has nothing to do with being on U.S. soil or not. Well, you know, in terms of citizenship, It does, yeah, but it does in terms of being born here. Well, let me read it again. That's probably not the best way to say it. Let me rephrase. All persons born or naturalized in the United States. Okay, it doesn't say born on U.S. soil. It never mentions U.S. soil. Oh, yes, it does. Sorry, Greg. Sorry, audience. Let me take two. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. Okay, what that means is that, yes, obviously, you know, born in the physical United States, but it only applies if you're not subject to jurisdiction of somewhere else. In other words, you're not a citizen of somewhere else. So illegal aliens cannot give birth to Americans on American soil. That's what it says. Because illegal aliens are subject to the jurisdiction, the citizen jurisdiction of the place where they have citizenship. In other words, their own country. Okay. Well, if you're citizens of another country, you can't give birth to Americans on American soil because they're subject to their parents, and their parents are subject to another country. Okay. That's how it works. So everybody that was awarded, quote, birthright citizenship was done illegally. And we have to find a way to get that mistake corrected. So we need to have a citizenship correction law that basically puts these folks into some kind of temporary status until they can be, you know, sent home. Yeah. Oh, but Greg, what about people who've been here for 20 years? That's not my problem. You know, I'm not the one who stayed here illegally for 20 years. They did. You know, so we're not going to blame the victims, the American people. You know, we're going to blame the perpetrators, the people who stayed here for all that time illegally. They should have known better than to come here illegally, you know, give birth on our soil and pretend to be Americans when they're not. Anyway, so that's the basis of the case is that the basis of my case is that illegal aliens have no rights here, none. You know, other than whatever criminal prosecutorial things that will happen for folks that are jurisdiction of another country. I mean, every country does that. You commit a crime in this country, you're going to have to pay for it if you're here illegally because the first crime is being here illegally and other crimes you may have to pay for, and then we send you home. Okay? You know, persona non grata, never to come back. So in that case, yes, there are procedures for criminals, international criminals. But as far as rights, no, rights are only for Americans. You know, and partial rights for those that are here as permanent residents. Okay, and that's it. But illegal aliens have no rights in this country at all for the simple reason that you cannot have rights in a place you're not allowed to be in. I don't care what the Supreme Court says because they can't defeat that argument. Oh, they can make it up and say they're persons. Well, of course they're persons. And they can say, well, because they're persons, they come under the jurisdiction of the 14th Amendment, equal protection. No, they don't because they're not subject to our jurisdiction by virtue of citizenship. It's a pretty simple case that they totally screwed up. Why? Because they want illegal aliens to be here forever. And we know that because in the case they clearly say that the purpose of this is to make sure these folks are, you know, these children of illegal aliens are adequately prepared for an adult life, you know, responsible life in this country. Well, why would you prepare illegal aliens for an adult life when they can't be here at all? Well, that's crazy. So the intention of the law is to break the law and make it possible for illegal aliens to stay here as much as possible. I mean, that's what the court decision does. Therefore, aiding and abetting a criminal operation does not make a Supreme Court opinion legal. So this is an illegal opinion. So overturning it shouldn't be a problem. But we better do it soon because, you know, we've got one more Marxist on the court. You know, we've got the good black person on the court now as compared to the bad black person. Okay, so Justice Jackson, I think, purpose is to show what the good black justice will do as opposed to the bad black justice, Clarence Thomas. Thomas is a free-thinking, independent, true American patriot who understands the Constitution and actually uses it in the Supreme Court cases, whereas the good Justice Jackson will totally subvert the Constitution, impose her Marxist views on every decision possible, you know, do it strictly by opinion, by political agenda, by talking points, and will be a total horrible, you know, waste of time on the court as much as the other liberal, you know, Marxist, you know, Kagan and Sotomayor on our court. But I didn't think about this till today, but I think the real purpose of the good black justice, you know, Jackson, as opposed to the bad black justice, Clarence Thomas, is to show what the good black justice will look like and do. That's really her purpose on the court, okay? So she's there to make Clarence Thomas look bad. And the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. All right, let me get to an article. Let's see if I can find this here, about another case that we're going to take up in great detail Monday. This is going to be fun. So West Virginia versus the EPA. So the Supreme Court actually did something right yet again, which is kind of surprising given their track record, where they actually ruled that the EPA can't just make stuff up. They can't just make up whatever regulation they want, and if Congress doesn't make a law against it, then it stands. No, it should be that the you know, the agencies are free to propose an amendment, a regulation. I mean, that's their job. They write them, they can propose them, but it doesn't take effect until Congress authorizes it. And that's the way it's supposed to be. In fact, it's interesting that West Virginia is one of the few states, and they mentioned this in the article, West Virginia is a state wherein no federal regulation applies until the state legislature approves it. I know Pianki's going to be happy at that. I'm happy when I read it. So I found something actually good in CNN Politics. You blew it, you know, from yesterday. You know, so you got an author here. CNN's Amanda Watts says West Virginia Governor Jim Justice, isn't that a great name for a governor, Governor Justice? I think it's great. West Virginia Governor Jim Justice celebrated Thursday's Supreme Court ruling, that would be yesterday, that curbed the EPA's ability to broadly regulate carbon emissions from existing power plants, okay? Which is amazing that, you know, and what it really does is shoots down this Green New Deal nonsense that carbon dioxide, you know, is a pollutant. It's not. Carbon dioxide occurred naturally before human life. It just did. I mean, carbon dioxide has been here longer than we have. So how can it be a pollutant? Okay, it's always been here. All right, anyway. He says, I applaud the Supreme Court's decision today in West Virginia v. EPA. Justice said in a statement, what if he was on the Supreme Court? He'd be Justice Justice. Sorry if I couldn't resist that. All right. I'm sure that joke's been made before. All right. Justice said in a statement, this ruling in favor of West Virginia will stop unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. from being able to unilaterally decarbonize our economy just because they feel like it. That is really a great statement. Okay. You know, unelected bureaucrats in Washington from being able to unilaterally decarbonize. I've never heard that word before, decarbonize our economy just because they feel like it. He says, instead, members of Congress who have been duly elected to represent the will of the people across all of America will be allowed to have a rightful say when it comes to balancing our desire for a clean environment with our need for energy and the security it provides us. Okay, well, first of all, that's easy to balance. You know, first of all, carbon dioxide is not a pollutant, it's plant food. Okay, it's actually a nutritional element. It's actually a vitamin. Okay, think of carbon dioxide as more like a vitamin than it is a pollutant. Right, so it's a plant fertilizer. It's a necessary ingredient. So it's not, and not only that, we need it in the carbon cycle. We need to replenish the carbon dioxide that was taken out by the plants, and we need to put it back by the plants that have, died, decomposed, and become oil. Okay. Now, I still don't think that the major source of oil are hydrocarbons that are made in the mantle of the earth. That's where oil really comes from, okay? Oil is a renewable resource. It is a clean resource because burning oil, you know, makes carbon dioxide, water, and some other stuff. Well, water vapor makes clouds, and carbon dioxide is plant food. So I'm not sure where the problem is, why these things are called pollutants. There's some other stuff in there, nitrogen monoxide, the sulfur monoxide, which become dioxides after a while, and carbon monoxide, which becomes carbon dioxide. Okay. When they cool down, the monoxide, another oxygen atom joins them, and they become carbon dioxide. Now, some of those things are pollutants, you know, and ozone. You know, you don't want too much ozone at the surface. You want it up way high, you know, in the atmosphere, so it'll filter out a lot of the ultraviolet rays, which are damaging. So that's a good thing. You want carbon dioxide because plant food. Nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide usually combines with water to form nitric acid and sulfuric acid, the old acid rain. And that's not a good thing. Okay. So we limit those, and that's why we have all these wonderful pollution controls on our vehicles. And what comes out of the tailpipe of a car today compared to a, you know, 1964 Impala, you know, 1964 Impala, the engines were terrible. As far as pollution goes, the world is so much cleaner. It's incalculable, you know, like 99.99 whatever percent cleaner. Getting that last, you know, point whatever percent is going to be prohibitively expensive. And it doesn't matter because forest fires, you know, release more pollution in a few weeks than the entire, you know, auto vehicle truck fleet, you know, of the entire United States. So, you know, forest fires cause more air pollution. Volcanoes cause more air pollution, you know, in one eruption than years worth of all the vehicles in the world. So, you know, it's put in perspective, folks. It's a control thing. It's not an environmental thing. All right. So he says this ruling will have, this is Justice, Governor Justice, who should be Supreme Court Justice, Justice. Sorry. This ruling will have a positive impact on our country for generations to come, and I'm proud that West Virginia was the state to lead the way in this landmark case. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey called the ruling a great win for the state. We are pleased this case returned the power to decide one of the major environmental issues of the day to the right place to decide it, the U.S. Congress, comprised of those elected by the people to serve the people. Well, unless, of course, they had vote fraud, like, you know, the Democrats that stole seats from Republicans in California at the permission of the Geldings to let them do that. So, you know, this the vote fraud angle that goes in here as well. Anyway, Morrissey said in a statement, this is about maintaining the separation of powers, not climate change Well, climate change is a myth anyway. The climate's doing just fine. And even if it's not, you're not going to change it with legislation, especially by taking away our energy. Anyway, he says, today the court made the correct decision to rein in the EPA, an unelected bureaucracy. Actually, I would call it a kingdom or a fiefdom. And we're not done. My office will continue to fight for the rights of West Virginians when those in Washington try to go too far in asserting broad powers without the people's support. Well, it's not a question that people support, as it is a question of legality. Constitutionally, they can't do that. Bureaucracies can't make law. You know, it's very clear in the Constitution. All legislative powers rest with the Congress. That's it. So if a regulation has the force of law, then it's illegal, unless it was promulgated by Congress, it was voted on, okay? Because Congress makes the laws. So this idea that the EPA and other, bureaucracies can just write regulations and those have the force of law is unconstitutional. Always has been. Reining them in, though, is a different problem. All right, looks like we got Shirley on the line. I'll let Shirley if she wants to vent and jump in on this fun stuff we're talking about, then feel free. Otherwise, let me get her theme up here and let's get talk to Shirley, and then we'll have Jim join us. I think Jim's on location on a field trip, so we'll see if he'll be doing that as well. And let me get this going here. Ah, here we go.
When one is faced with a crisis, you find your true character. How you react to such an emergency can determine the rest of your life. Two paths present themselves for you to choose. One leads to tragedy. The other leads to becoming a new person. Shirley Wattrall, a survivor of a dangerously abusive relationship, is that new person. She is the author of Heels to Holster. She is a firearms instructor, motivational speaker, women's empowerment advocate, and a reporter for Action Radio. So now, here is the DC Project, Women and Guns, with Shirley Wattrall.
You know, I can't believe I used to get up at this time every day for 6 o'clock Central. It's crazy. I'm really getting used to that 7 o'clock. It's looking better and better. I'll see what we can do with all you guys. Good morning, Shirley.
Hey, Greg. How's it going?
It's fine. I'm coming off the most amazing show yesterday I think we've ever done. We had Brandon House, who is Mike Lindell's producer of his election documentary movies, also has his own entire media complex, WVW Media. He does radio. He does TV. And it looks like he's going to be supporting our legislation. And they have an upcoming conference. And so I'll be talking to him about our three most important bills right now, which are the vaccine product liability, the ending of big tech censorship, and a bill I wrote with Dr. Zelenko to change the emergency use authorization procedure so they can't mandate, all this crap on us and vaccines when we have perfectly good cures like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. I forgot to mention something. Dr. Zelenko died yesterday, and this is a loss. I don't know why I didn't say in the first half hour. I must be slipping, but he was a friend of mine. I got to know him over a couple of years. He was first on our show in August of 2020, and then back in December, we wrote that bill between those two interviews, and I went over it with him the second time, and that bill's still there. So now I'm more dedicated than ever trying to get that passed so that we never have a situation where Dr. Fascist can mandate stuff across the country, and people actually believe that he has the ability to do that. And so we'll be changing some things. So that's my note. I should have said it earlier, but there we go. Anyway, so otherwise, I'm doing great, and I'm a little sad at the same time. So, it's a mixed bag today. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine. You get me going in the morning. I have to really pay attention because you get going. I'm like, dang, how many cups of coffee do you have?
This is my normal speed. I do have a big mug of tea, but it's not the caffeine. It's the adrenaline. I mean, I've always been this way. You can tell I drove my teachers nuts from the time I was like 5 years old. They're like, Greg, what's wrong with you? They hadn't come up with ADHD yet. Otherwise, I would have been drugged from a very early age. But fortunately, I wasn't. So I got through before that. That nasty. This is normal. Should I? I can do like Dennis Prager. You want me to do the Dennis Prager show? And now the distinguished firearms reporter, Shirley Wattrall.
Oh, good Lord. I'll fall asleep on that one.
Exactly. See, I get 10 times more words in a show than Dennis Prager does, making our show 10 times more valuable.
There you go. That's true. I'm learning about this. I'm learning every time I come on the show. But you were talking about, I learned something the other day. I started back to the gym that I used to go to before COVID hit, and you know, I was not about to wear a mask to do cardio and all that. So,
oh God, no.
Things have let up
that's
there.
Just stupid.
And you don't have. Yeah, you don't have to wear a mask, right? So I'm seeing I walk in there, some employees are wearing a mask. I thought it must be a choice that they choose to wear a mask. And then one of them finally told me, she goes, no, we have to because we didn't get the vaccine. I went, oh, so basically the mask here is pointing out who stood up and said no to the vaccine. I went, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
So, it, you know, because I assumed the other, but, you know.
Well, you know what you could
do? Business.
You could talk to the management. In fact, I did this with my own gym. I said, you can't have these people wearing masks. I said, you're in a gym. It's a hot, sweaty environment. I said, why are you having people, you know, lower their oxygen content, especially your customers, you know, but even your staff.
Now.
Well, I know,
no,
but I just said, but it doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't work on anybody. These masks don't stop viruses.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look at the box.
I agree.
Yeah.
But
have you seen on the box?
Well,
it is funny.
I just thought it was funny that, you know, I assumed one thing and then found out totally different. I went, oh,
yeah.
So now the people that are wearing a mask go, way to go, hang in there. Because, well, you know, Florida's like a work at will. So if they didn't, they probably would get fired. And
yeah,
know,
well, it's interesting.
Sometimes.
Now you're in a different place than we are because I'm here in the Panhandle. I'm in Milton near Pensacola. And I haven't seen a mask on a person in a long time. And the grocery stores occasionally, but even they get rid of them. I mean, because they're more of a national thing. But the local businesses, we have more masks, you know, since 2020 maybe. You know, and we knew they didn't work then. We never even, in fact, our city council voted down a mask mandate, much to the upset of our mayor, who immediately went on CNN, Mayor Lindsay, which was hysterical. The little mayor of Milton, right, gets on CNN. My city council wouldn't vote for a mask mandate. And we're like, yeah, because we're smart. Anyway.
Well, when I sit at outside my coffee shop and I watch them, some of them wearing masks, I went, huh, you must be from up north.
What, did you ask them?
Here. We haven't worn those forever.
Well, yeah, like if they come down from like New Jersey, you know, like or like Brooklyn, yeah. So they're wearing a mask up there because like they have to. Well, you know what I mean? So you wear a mask or what? Right?
Either that
go ahead.
Or
so tell me
California.
What you're talking about. Yeah. Or
it
California.
Could be
that
California too.
Yeah, but we'll talk slower.
Well, just okay. I just thought that was pretty amazing. I'm like, all right, Shirley, gotta listen, pay attention, get with it. But anyway, as far as DC Project, we're going to talk a little bit about DC Project for anyone that's listening that doesn't know what DC Project is. We're Women for Gun Rights. We are nationwide. We have a Florida State Director. I'm a Florida State Director. We have state directors all over the country. And we're sticking up for our Second Amendment, finding ways to defend it. And in our six short years, you know, I thought it was, for some reason, you think it's longer. Various delegates have testified in hearings across America, state and federal levels. So every Tuesday, I post a story on my Facebook page. And dang it, I bet I forgot to put it on Action Radio.
Probably.
I need to have a checklist.
Well, I just want it to feel like a reflex. You know, it should be a reflex. Post story to the gun page.
Here.
sometimes
just, and sometimes yeah. I forget to do it on my Instagram even, and it's like, crap, it's Wednesday, and it's 2 for 2 Tuesday.
It's Tuesday, it's already Wednesday, yeah.
Every Tuesday, I posted the story of how someone used a firearm to save their life, because all the anti-gun groups are posting stories of, you know, people getting killed by guns. Well, I want to show that guns do save lives. And in this one actually took place in Pensacola. Yeah, I don't always pick Florida stories, but this one just so happens to be from Florida. Mm-hmm. And this woman, she just recently moved into this neighborhood. Instead of reading, I'm just going to tell you about it, and we can chat about it as things
come
up.
Yeah, that's fine.
So she recently moved into this neighborhood, and it was 9 o'clock in the morning, and she woke up, and there was an intruder in her bedroom. First of all, I stop right there because I think about it. You open your eyes up and there's somebody standing in your bedroom that's not supposed to be there. I can only imagine what the heart rate's going to do at that point.
Well,
so
it's an adrenaline, you know, because if you've ever heard a loud noise in your place or you woken up suddenly at night for anything, you know, that's one thing. But to wake up suddenly and there's like somebody standing there, that's an order of magnitude above the normal adrenaline reaction. So, yeah, and that's fight or flight. You know, that's a natural reaction.
Exactly. So put that on top of what she did next. So here's this person, this attacker. I'm not going to call him a person. I'm going to call him an attacker. in her bedroom. She wakes up, sees this attacker in her bedroom, and then he starts attacking her. And she has the mindset to go for her firearm, and she shoots him. Now, like you said, you get that fight or flight, and she just did what she had to do to save her life. Because you can only imagine what would have happened if she did not have a firearm.
Yeah, she had the right instincts. You know, she had the right instincts to protect herself. And at that point, you know, you just don't think, you just do. And so it's amazing what people can do to save themselves. And people think, you know, well, you know, you hear this liberal crap all the time. Well, the gun will be taken away from you. Well, they just say that so you won't get one. You know, it's not true. You know, that's the whole purpose of guns, is it keeps people at a distance. But I've heard stories. And you know, not only is the adrenaline running, but the adrenaline's, you know, superpowering you so that you can fight off somebody long enough to get a firearm and stop the threat. And this is just incredible. And we're talking women, small women, you know, small guys, you know, everybody has adrenaline. Everybody has the ability to do amazing things under stress. And so it comes out. And these stories just confirm for me over and over again that people, you know, can and will defend themselves, you know, even if they've had no practice, no classes, just basic instincts. I mean, it's not that hard to work a gun. You know, it's better if you have training, obviously. It's better if you have practice, obviously. But even if you don't, you know, and you're, you know, it's just, it can save your life. And that's why we have them. Yeah. Anyway, tell me more.
Exactly. So, and then the other interesting part they found out later, it was a neighbor. It was someone that lived next door to this woman. She had just moved in recently. And this happened to be someone that lived in the neighborhood. And the really cool part about this whole report, because I've never read a story on anyone where they used a firearm and it saved their life, where the actual reporter commented, or like the chief, what is his name? Chief Dan Slott. Well, he was asked, how is the victim doing emotionally? The reporter asked that. How is the victim?
They thought about the victim. Yeah, that's Pensacola. We have a very conservative area here. We don't consider ourselves part of Florida. We're
not
really
Pensacola.
Sure where we are, but yeah. This is us. Yeah.
No.
What?
We're not Pensacola. Pinellas County.
Oh, Pinellas. So I thought it was Pensacola. You said it was Pensacola. Ooh, my mistake.
No, actually.
Well, don't worry about
it. We'll clear that
out. So where
is it? Clearwater. We're in Clearwater.
Which part of Florida is that?
Tampa. Clearwater.
Okay, I know where you are. See, well, that's different.
Yeah,
then.
You know what?
Well, so we have a good reporter. Why don't you get him on the show?
Well, yeah, I could check to see if I can. But anyway, so she asked the chief, this question. And here's his comment, really. Good people don't want to have to do this kind of thing to protect themselves. So she is upset. Of course she's upset. Nobody thinks about the victim that just had to use a firearm to save their life. They always, you know, side with the attacker or the murderer, the person that's intent to do you bodily harm. And then later on, they're interviewing one of the neighbors. And they're saying, well, now that we know that it was a neighbor, they're feeling uncomfortable about it. That someone could come into their house like that. But then they're also concerned about how she's feeling and how she's doing, which I thought was pretty awesome, because lots of times the victim does not get, they don't even think about what they're going through mentally. Because after you do that, and actually this person did die, this attacker did die. So just think of the mentally what she's going to be going through from now on. And I think she did what she had to do. I think that, you know, you need to defend yourself and be your own first responder. So it's just really refreshing to see someone looking at the other person, the side of the victim and what they're going through now.
You know, it's interesting. It's something that you guys want to look into. You know me, I always have, it's always time to take notes. Here's note time, because I have another idea for you. A lot of folks don't know, and that includes me, all the stages of emotions and the legal responsibilities that you're going to have to go through if you have to defend your life with a gun. You know, the adrenaline, the hearing loss, the shock, the trauma, the regret. I mean, nobody wants to kill somebody. The anger of being put in a position where you have to. This is something I think we should explore. And if you have a chance to do that, maybe DC Project has something on this. But this isn't a man-woman thing. This is anybody who goes through this. You know, the legal implications, what to say, what not to say. You know, shut up until you've calmed down and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, we know the basics, but I don't think a lot of people really know the stages that people go through, you know, people who have never been in a situation like that before. And I'm sure soldiers go through the same thing. Anybody that has to take a life, you know, that that they're either duty bound to in the military or because they have to save their life in the civilian world, you know, or even in or law enforcement. Because they, I mean, we all have these stages that we go through. And I'm not exactly sure what they are, but I think it'd make for an interesting topic so that we can, and in fact, DC Project may want to document it. If you have to save your life, this is what to expect kind of thing. Anyway, it's just
right. And also I'm going to bring up, cause you talk about it. There's insurance mm-hmm. like USCCA, US Law Shield and various other ones that if you have to defend yourself, you have someone mm-hmm. to call and they will do such things as if you get arrested, they will bail you out. They will get you an attorney. And in the, I'm actually a member of USCCA, and they go through they give you a little card. This is if you have to defend yourself, this is mm-hmm. what you need to do. And basically the last thing, as long as, you know, pointing out anyone that witnessed it or any evidence around you, when the police arrive, you also have to just say, you know, I will work with the police 100%. I just need to talk to my attorney. And because you also, and that's where you stop. Because, you know, when you have that adrenaline rush, you got to be careful what you say and how it's going to be interpreted. Because right now, your mind is, I can only imagine, well, I somewhat imagine, but not to that degree, what your mind's going through. So, yeah, that's why I, if you have a concealed carry license or even if you're defending yourself in your home, I advise you to look into getting some type of insurance like these companies provide. But that's a good topic. I'll see what I can find out on it because, mm-hmm. you know, when that adrenaline kicks in and you get that tunnel vision and like I don't know if we've talked about it on the show before, but some either things seem to speed up or slow down. And even when I was in scenario training, things slowed down for me because it seemed like it took mm-hmm. forever for me to draw from my holster and defend myself. So that there's a lot going on in your mind, and your body is just trying to protect itself. So it's going to mm-hmm. do certain things to preserve it, and that's shut down your hearing. And that's why you have to be real observant of when the police come, because don't forget, they're having an adrenaline rush because now they have someone called in a shooting, so they don't know who the invader is or attacker is and who's the person defending themselves. So you got to be conscious of that. And I know Jim's going to be calling in, but before, unless you have something else to say about the story, I want to jump onto something that's happened next Friday already so I mm-hmm. can get it in there. So we have a guest next Friday, Tess Salb. She has an amazing bio, truly amazing. She's a pentathlon. Do you know what that is?
A who? No, I don't. It sounds Greek, though. Well, the pentathlon is
I don't
a
know
five
if
event.
I should
That's five. Decathlon is 10. Pentathlon must
oh,
be five.
Oh, there you go. You have to be so smart. So, yeah.
Well, I'm part
exactly.
Greek, and, you know, I have to learn words. Sorry. There's so much. You wouldn't believe the useless crap that's in my head that only comes up on times like this. I mean, how often is someone going to say, hey, Greg, you know, you can get $10,000 if you can define pentathlon? Okay, well, it's a five-event thing. You know. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, and it is a five-event thing. But do you want to try and name those events? And she was doing this at the age of 12.
Yes. Let me try and it's got to be three guns. So three of the events are three different guns. So there's a shotgun event, there's a rifle event, and there's a pistol event. There would be a long-distance target and a close-up action kind of target thing. How am I doing?
Well, you got one down, shooting.
Oh, okay. Oh, so wait a minute. Oh, so this is an athletic event, too. So this isn't just a shooting event. So you did not tell me the criteria. So if the criteria is sports in general, okay, that's fine. All right. I'm just writing down tests for next week because, I remember reading her bio.
Okay, you got one now. You want to try for four more?
I do. Let me think here.
Right.
So if it's shooting, it's got to be some kind of running event.
Okay, you got two.
All right, and it's probably some kind of an obstacle course.
I'll go with a no on that one.
Okay, so we'll go no. So we've got shooting, we got running. Is there a climbing event as part of this?
No.
All right, wait a minute. I could waste the whole show and just guess because I love doing things like that. Okay. In the interest of time and the fact that I know you just can't wait to tell me because I guess pentathlon. So,
well, I could wait to let Tess tell you.
No, it's okay.
She's in suspense.
Now, now I want to know. Go ahead.
Swimming.
What? Really?
Swimming.
Oh, bike riding would be another one then.
Nope. Horseback riding.
Oh, and are you shooting from these positions? Do you have to shoot from the water? Do you have to shoot from the horse?
Okay, you can write that down. Yeah, it'll be a question for Tess. Tess will tell us all about this. I don't want to go through her whole talk, but there's one more. You're going to love this one.
Okay.
Fencing.
Oh, yes. I love fencing. I was looking for a salle here. That's S-A-L-L-E for those who don't speak French. I was looking for a fencing salle so that I could catch up. I used to fence in college and loved it. My favorite is the épée, because the épée has the whole body target. So you can tap somebody's wrist and win, or you can hit their big toe and get a point. I mean, the épée is the dueling sword. You know, sabers for the brutes that want to like slash and hack, and you know, it's kind of I think it loses some of the elegance of the épée. And the foil is boring because it's too thin, too small, and it only has the upper torso as a target. So what's the point of that? You know, I mean, the whole body's a target for a sword, right? So I am an épée fan. In fact, I'd love to get fencing again. Maybe we'll find a place around here. So I know what to do. Oh, we have a new place. I got the perfect idea. Thank you. You're a genius. Yeah, you are. You're just surely you're a genius. All right. So we have a new place opening up called Stand Your Ground. Stand Your Ground is a new shooting range in Milton. But it's also got axe throwing. It's got Krav Maga. It's got archery, paintball. It's got all these things. But what they don't have is fencing. Guess what I'm going to talk to them about
today.
There
you go. Exactly.
Ah, this is why I love having you on the show. You're such a genius. All right. So go ahead. So fencing.
So anyways.
Have you tried
what?
It? Fencing.
What? No.
Have you tried fencing? No.
No.
You see yourself with a sword?
Don't
you want to duel?
Like I do the speed bag on like a boxing speed bag. I started that up again.
Fun.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm hopeless at that. I'm not coordinated at all. No, I can't do speed bags. For me, it's a slow bag. It's a one-time bag. You hit it, wait. Hit it, wait. Because I can't. Could you do the rhythm thing like Rocky?
I was doing pretty well a few years ago before I stopped going to that gym, and then I went back and there it is again. So yeah, I just started up again yesterday, and it's funny it comes back to you pretty quick.
Yeah.
But I was able to do the forward backward. I was getting pretty good at that, but also I'll get back into that.
Okay, you should try fencing.
But anyway,
take a lesson. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I digress. It's Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
So I want to finish up with Tess a little bit more because I think it's going to be really amazing, and I hope a lot of people listen in because she was also on the U.S. World Championship shooting team.
Wow.
She competed in 5 World Cups during that time. She qualified the 2000 U.S. Olympics trials. I'm not sure what sport she was in, but currently she's done 3-gun. She's a 3-gun competitor, triathlons, Ironman, and she does tactical games. Tactical games, by my definition, is kind of like 3-gun on steroids because you're doing a lot of physical stuff as well as participating with the 3 different types of firearms.
Do they have an over 60 group for those that are?
You know, I've watched her, and the women's section of this is growing, and I've seen where she even offers classes as well. So she's done a lot of amazing stuff, a very talented lady, and she's done all this, and she's also the director of marketing and communications for Hi-Viz. So, yeah, she's going to have a lot to
Those are gun sites, right? Hi-Viz? Those are like fiber optic gun sites? Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So
I think we're going to learn a lot from her.
Well, here's what I'm thinking.
She has numerous awards, you know.
Here's what I'm thinking. If you guys want to start at the top of the hour, if I can get you both here at 7:00 Eastern instead of 7:30, you guys can have the hour. It sounds like she's going to be interesting enough to do it. I know Jim's going to want to talk to her. So either go into
Jim's
his report.
Jim's not going to be here.
Was that his week
That's
off?
Why I got an hour. It's the second week of July, second Friday. I usually try to get my people that I'm going to interview because then I'll have extra time if they want to stay on. But yeah,
I had forgotten that because wait a minute, no, July 4th is only the first Friday. You're right.
Today's the first Friday.
Oh, see, this is why you're on the show because you keep me straight, keep me organized. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
So all right, so take
so
the whole
anyway,
hour, regular
on,
time, unless you want to call in early. You know, it's up to you guys. Take an hour and a half.
She's
I don't care.
Central.
We can talk guns. Yeah.
She's on Central Time, so I've got her set for 7:30.
Yeah. Think she'll stay like all your guests do for the rest of the show?
They usually stay and I have to go.
Yeah,
funny.
It cracks me up. The only time it happens. You're the only host that brings on guests and they stick around for the, you know, they talk to Derek, they talk to Jim, you know, they stick around for we are like talk to Bianchi, you know, when we end up the week. I mean, it's hysterical. You're already gone. You're doing other stuff and your guests are still here and they're like, hey, this is fun. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. So Jim hasn't come in yet. I know he said he was.
No, he is doing something today. He's going to call us. I don't know what he's a shooting thing like when. I can't forget his name. Donnie used to call in when he was doing all the competition stuff and keeping us, informed as to what was going on. And then he covered the issues. That's why, you know, the only reason Donnie's not on is it hasn't changed that much from week to week, you know, as far as competitions go. But, I think Jim might even be shooting today. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. But he'll call us.
Did he compete? I didn't know that. I'll have to ask.
Well, we're going to find out. You know, all you people have these hidden sides. I wonder if he fences. Do you think Jim fences? I don't think so.
No, I don't. No. I don't see him as that. But hey, you never. I don't see him as that. But
do you remember the show? Were you here for the show we did on dueling? This is about like 4 or 5
yes.
months ago.
Yeah. Yes, I actually have a book on that. I haven't read it yet. It's called The Duel.
You do.
I think we talked about that.
Now, yeah. I know this is a guy thing. Do you think it's a woman thing? Do you think it would catch on as a way to settle disputes and prove your honor? And, you know, you don't have to go for blood or death or obviously things like that. But, I mean, just the idea of facing somebody with a sword, you know, I think it brings about a whole different idea of your conviction, even if you're all padded and masked and things like that. But would you fight for your honor? Of something, of your principles, for what you believed in? Or if you were insulted, it's like, look, we're not going to do lawsuits. We're not going to do this crazy stuff. We're going to go fence.
Well, it's funny because I might see about if they have any lessons on fencing, because for some reason when I'm hitting that speed bag, it just feels so good.
Oh, here's your dark side coming out, Shirley.
That was there because I said, you know, I need a refresher. I forgot what height to set it at, and then just you know, hit me up again with the technique and stuff. So he's going over it, and he's standing there, and I'm like, oh yeah, this. Oh, I remember why I like this so much. This is just
Did you ever
great.
Do kickboxing? Did you do kickboxing at all?
No, I did not.
Yeah. But, see, I want to look for. I want to find a martial art for myself now that I'm getting, you know, thinner and trim after years of after my heart surgery, and it's like I'm getting thinner, and I'm looking for a sport. I mean, I'm bike riding now. I'm hitting the gym. You know, I'm doing all kinds of things. And so I'm looking for a martial art. Krav Maga is a little extreme. I tried that once. I was put in an arm bar and it hurt a lot. You know, I know why they call them submission holds. You know, I think the guy was like 23. You know, he was really nice, you know, but he still put me in an arm bar. And he said, well, I didn't really put that much pressure on. I said, good, thank you. You know, I want to keep playing guitar. So I really appreciate it. That's a great looking Krav Maga. I don't think this one's for me. Anyway, same thing with jujitsu, but I'll find something. Anyway, I've been taking way too much of your time.
No, that's good. Apparently, we're going to have a lot of time. But interesting. I don't know if Jim was competing in something, but yeah.
We'll find out.
I was going to go to the range today, but instead I got to go start car shopping. I hate car shopping, but I got
to
do that.
Oh, what are you going to get? Well, I would love to. I'm trying to find a car person. I want to do a car show. So if you want to talk about your experience, well, what are you looking for? What's is there the car show look the same? Go ahead.
My experience, I did not want to be doing this. Someone decided to drive into me, not just hit me. He just drove into me and totaled my car.
I'm sorry. Wow.
So, no, this is not something I look forward to doing or ever like doing. When I get my cars, I like my cars and I keep them in good shape. And that just, And then it was really, even topped it off, is afterwards the guy had no idea what year it was, where he was going, where it was coming from.
Was he drunk?
And he hit me. No. He hit me, you know, it wasn't like I was changing lanes or something. He just drove right into me. It was in my rear driver's side panel and sent me into a spin in the middle of the road, which I hit another car. So
that's not your fault.
A lot for me to be grateful for. I have to stay focused on that because sometimes I get a little upset. It's like that car was paid off. It was in great shape, had 70,000 miles. And now here I am trying to figure it out again.
They're going to pay for it, so it's not the money, but it's a loss. You know, people forget how much they put into their cars.
Because what they're paying me is not going to, to handle, you know, pay for a good, nice new car.
Definitely. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
The car was 11 years old, and it's something that they stopped making. So but anyway.
So you can't replace it.
I digress. Yeah.
No, digress. Now, this is, we got time. But this, see, now cars are like guns. I mean, these are very, there's certain things that you have that you don't really have a lot of, you know, I don't put a lot of, you know, personal attention into my microwave. Okay. It's there. It heats things up. I'm happy. Okay. But guns are like, those possessions are a part of me. I mean, they're very personal. They're selected for various reasons, you know, that, you know, aesthetic, beauty, function, handling, you know, works in my hand. You know, I actually can fit my rather bizarre shoulder head combination because my, you know, head's too big. I could destroy all those facts up there. But I mean, cars are part of us. Cars are different kinds of possession. It's not just a thing. I mean, some people say, yeah, it's just transportation. It just takes me from here to there. But for a lot of us, cars are more. Now, you've got an opportunity here to get a classic, a non-computerized car that will not be affected by, you know, EMPs and, you know, and a lot of the stuff that's going on as they try to regulate and take away our vehicles. Would you consider a classic car, for example?
Oh, I have no problem. I love the classic cars, but I need something because my truck has 300 and some thousand miles on it. So I need something that's not real old.
Okay.
Not that new cars break down left and right too. But no, I love the classic cars. You know, I remember when I first got married, my ex now had a 69 mm-hmm. Shelby convertible. Loved that
Ooh.
Thing. I mean, that thing shook you to death, yeah. And it just, I loved it. so no, I love classic cars. And yes. You know, and I keep a car, and I try to keep it in good shape, and love my truck. Everybody wants to buy my truck, and it's like, no, take a number.
That's funny. See, I want a 67 Firebird. You know, I have a cobalt blue, white top, leather interior. You know, a lot of walnut grain, if I can get, I don't know what's on it, but anyway. So that's, you know, we all have our classics, but if you find one that's not the most popular, say you like, you know, 61 Thunderbirds, for example. I mean, they're out there. They're not as expensive as your Mustangs and Corvettes, which were sort of, and Camaros, which kind of dominate, you know, the classic market, 57 Chevy, things like that, you know, 57 T-Birds. But if you get something that's not quite as, you know, as popular, it's like second, third tier classics. They're not that more, you know, they're comparably priced to new cars. New cars are so expensive these days. Even recently used cars are so expensive these days that this is one of these undiscovered markets of the classic cars. And they don't depreciate. You know, you're not losing money on a classic, especially if you get something that's not, you know, the biggest, best, you know, classic car. It might be something really interesting to take a look at.
Yeah, and
just a thought.
And because I also thought, well, because I do a lot, I'm doing a lot more traveling, and I do rallies mm-hmm. and stuff for DC Project, which means you have to haul other stuff around, and my G37S. It was a convertible hardtop, and I couldn't fit much in there, you know, unless I have to be very cautious how I pack because it's very small. So I'm thinking, well, maybe it's time to get it some type of SUV. But I was talking to my insurance agent, and he, because you know how hard cars are to get, you know, parts for and everything, and he told me a rather new Mercedes was in an accident, and I guess they needed a part, and it was going to take a year to replace it. And they totaled it. So it was going to take a year to get this one part. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So
yeah. Mercedes is generally really great cars. Yeah. Well, let's get Jim's opinion. He's on the line now. Find out, Jim, first of all, how much time you have, and secondly, we're talking cars with Shirley. We sort of digressed a little bit from our usual topic because it's Friday and we do that. Jim, what do you think?
That's right.
Got any
cars
ideas?
Are good.
Yep. Okay. So she recently had an accident. Somebody ran into her. And so, you know, I was suggesting possibly a classic car at this time. Of course, you might have to get, you know, like one that can do the distance traveling. You want something that's newer and more reliable. But I don't know. I think, you know, maybe it's time for that GTO. I don't know. Yeah. Shirley? Jim?
No, like I said, I like muscle cars. I like all that stuff. But, yeah. So, anyway, this is something that I'm not looking for. I don't like car shop. I don't like dealing with car salesmen. I married one. That didn't work out so well.
Hey, listen, marriage didn't work out that well. So for me, I tried marriage once. Can't recommend it. You know, so it's like Jim's doing okay, which is great. But yeah. So Jim, where are you?
I am at the Port Malabar Rifle and Pistol Club.
Yay. Are you competing today? What's the story?
No, I just brought my wife and some friends of ours out so I can take them through the action base out here and help them a little bit more with shooting. My wife and her friend both have their concealed carry license but haven't shot a whole lot. So came out a couple times before and worked on some fundamentals. So today we're going to work more on shooting while moving and shooting from barricades and things like that.
Huh.
Wait a minute. Wait.
Go ahead.
Wait. So I want to get another twist in it. You know, women and guns. You've got your wife out there. She's got a friend out there. So what's their thoughts on why is this something that they're doing now? Have they always had their concealed carry license, or has the world pushed them into this?
So my wife has had hers for quite a few years and didn't do a lot of training, mostly because she was a teacher. And so she was spending almost all of her time in a classroom where she couldn't have a firearm anyway. And her thoughts were that I was always with her the other times, and so she didn't need to, as much as I tried to convince her otherwise. But now she and her friend are working as real estate agents. Her friend in the Air Force, but before that was from California and had never had a desire to get one. And once she started working real estate and realized she was going to be places by herself, she decided that she would go get her concealed carry license. And so she and her husband got hold of me and said, hey, can you take us out and go over at least fundamentals of shooting and some basic tactics of shooting? So that's kind of how it all got started.
Oh, that's great. And then I noticed, then I'm going to be quiet and let you do your report. But first thing that came to mind is your wife was a teacher. How does she feel about carrying in the schools and stuff like that? You guys ever talked about that?
Oh, yeah.
Letting the teachers be able to defend themselves?
Yes. She absolutely believes they should be able to, and had a fair amount of teachers at her school who probably would have gotten certified and carried if they had been able to. So she is all for it.
Okay. That's it for my question.
Well, no, listen, and part of this report is you guys talking together. That's why I put you together here and why I'm starting the show an hour earlier. But I was going to ask, because I knew Shirley wanted to get in this, is there, for someone like Jim, who, you know, firearms expert, he's, you know, law enforcement, military, but teaching is a different skill. And I don't know if you taught firearms in the military or law enforcement, Jim, but for someone that maybe hasn't been a teacher before, could you offer a course as a firearms instructor for people that want to bring people out for the first time? They wouldn't be instructors, but at least they have a more of a knowledge of what to look for and help folks out and maybe encourage, you know, professional instruction like you offer. Is this something like a sort of a pinch hitter course? They used to do that for people that, you know, if one spouse flies and the other one doesn't, the non-flying spouse would get big training, like, you know, landing, radio communications, you know, basic airplane control, so that if something happened to the spouse that did fly, they could save the airplane. And I'm just thinking, and they call the pinch hitters course. Is there something like that for firearms where you know, you're not an instructor, but you know more than, you know, your basic shooter about teaching firearms? Shirley?
I thought that was for Jim. Yeah.
No, it's for you.
Here's the way I look at it. If you're taking a friend to the range and you feel comfortable with your firearm and firearm safety, you know it well. You're not that you just go wild and just go press trigger a bunch of times. But if you don't feel that you can adequately portray firearm safety or how to use a firearm, then you need to get someone involved that can. But if you do, that's great. Take them to the range. But don't get to the – if it's outside of your comfort zone or if you don't feel you're knowledgeable enough, then I think it's very important that you find someone that is. And I think it's great that that Jim is working with his wife on this, because in certain occasions when I've had husband and wife, I had to kind of separate them out and let them know that I'm still the teacher. You can't, you know, because of course, man likes to dominate because he I don't know, maybe I'm not talking, I shouldn't talk for men, but I don't know if you guys are, you assume that you know everything about it because it's a gun. I don't know. But a couple times I had to, you know, kind of reel him in and say, hey, you know, I got this. Back off. I got this, you know.
Yeah,
anyway,
you're the instructor.
I think that's great. I think that's great that you're working with your wife.
Yeah, I agree with just about everything you said there, Shirley. In fact, I tell people all the time that I think that the women who I've taught to shoot are much better students than the men, because they don't assume that because it's a firearm, they already know what they're doing, and they actually listen to and do exactly what you tell them. And they don't have all the bad habits that have been built up, and they don't have that kind of, I inherently can do this because I'm a man type attitude that a lot of men have. And then Greg, to your question you were asking, if you are very knowledgeable about what you're talking about, whether it's firearm safety or fundamentals of shooting, then I think that's a good thing to take people out who haven't been shooting. My concern is I have seen a lot of people who are actually instructors who don't have any idea what they're talking about and teach a lot of really, really bad habits. And those become very difficult to unlearn once you learn them. So
yep.
If at all possible, I would love for people to do some research and find someone who, you know, knows what they're talking about and what they're doing when they're teaching them how to shoot. But, I mean, the basics and safety are not that difficult to learn as long as you don't have someone who's trying to teach you the wrong thing.
Yeah, yeah. I used to be a flight instructor, which I will probably do again at some point. And there are big differences between how men and women learn, you know, and there is an expectation. Guys think because it's a guy thing, they're supposed to know how to do it. What I found the difference was, and I'll get to Jim's team, got Pianchi waiting on the line too. Women would learn faster. They would trust me more. But I also found it fascinating that they would ask for help sooner in a situation. The guys would gut it out longer. They would try longer themselves. And it usually was for the better. I'm not saying that, you know, because there are times when you have to ask for help and you should ask for help. And that's one thing that women were better doing, communicating with, you know, the radio, the towers, the things like that. Guys would sometimes wait too long to ask for help. But there are differences between how men and women do things. And it was fascinating. I had a lot of women students because I treated all my students equally. You know, you all had the same challenges. I didn't baby anybody. I didn't favor anybody. I didn't give anybody less of a flight instruction training because they're men or women. And, you know, my standards were my standards. And I think because of that, I had a lot of women students. But there is a difference, and it's fascinating. You know, my ideal airline cockpit would have, you know, both a man and a woman on board just for the different skills that they bring to flying and probably to shooting too. Comments, panel?
No, I agree. Women, they don't have that and maybe when they're flying, they'll be quick to ask for directions, so they won't be circling the airport.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting that there was the person, it was a guy that hopped into that Cessna Caravan from the Caribbean, hopped into the pilot seat and said, okay, I can land this plane. I've got no experience. Let's go. So, you know, like I said, there are differences. It is interesting. All right, let me get to your theme. Shirley, how much time? Do you have to leave right away, or can you stick around for a bit?
I can stick around for a little bit.
Okay, good. Don't forget your communication, your info to how we can reach you. Let's get to Jim's theme, and away we go.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement, and now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
We need like a protest, hey, hey, ho, ho, open carry's the way to go. I mean, something, you know, interesting. I mean, the left is already protesting. Why can't we protest too, Jim? Hey, hey, ho, ho, open carry's the way to go. Shirley, what do you think?
There you go.
I don't know where that came from. Yeah. Yeah, it is. So, you know, I don't know if you can say ho ho without attracting attention. But anyway, Jim, what's going on?
Yes, sir. Oh, all kinds of fun stuff. I figure before I start, I'm going to let Shirley give her contact information, because if she has to drop off, I don't want her to miss out on that. So go ahead, Shirley.
Good call.
All right. Yes, if you're interested in getting involved with DC Projects and helping us to support the Second Amendment, you can go to dcproject.info and sign up, make a donation, whichever one you prefer to do, or do both. And also, if you have any questions for me, you can reach me at Shirley Watrall, S-H-I-R-L-E-Y-W-A-T-R-A-L, at gmail.com. And if you're interested in purchasing my book, Heels to Holster, you can find it on Amazon.
There we go. All right, I just muted Jim temporarily because there were gunshots in the background. Although maybe that's appropriate for your contact information. I don't know. Anyway, so Jim, you're back. I just so we're just going to understand that you know that. You can't control the noise, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I figured that Shirley would be okay
that's good.
Gunshots in the background.
Oh, Pianki's here too. Hey, Pianki.
That's good. That noise is not too loud. It's good. I like it.
The sound of freedom.
There we go. Oh, yeah. So, Jim Dykes reporting with the Sound of Freedom. Go ahead, Jim.
There we go. Got to love it. So I just had a few things that I wanted to talk about this week. We talked about the New York rifle and pistol case last week that the Supreme Court handed down. And so as a direct result of that, this week the Supreme Court vacated and remanded four cases that involved the Second Amendment back to the courts to have them decide again using the criteria that they set down in the New York rifle and pistol case. So the cases that they remanded back were challenges to standard capacity, or what they call high capacity magazines, in New Jersey and California. Each one of those was a ban on magazines that hold 10 rounds or more. Hawaii's restrictions on open carry. And then Maryland's so-called assault weapons ban. So all of those cases have been vacated and remanded back to the appellate courts or trial courts for reevaluation under the recent decision from the Supreme Court in New York rifle and pistol.
So those cases are all decided wrongly at the appellate level, and they must have been decided wrong at the district or the circuit level too. Circuit courts, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
They all screwed up.
Yes, I know all of them were decided incorrectly at the appellate level. I would assume that they were all incorrectly decided at the district level as well.
Well, how does that happen? How do we get, people that go through law school, they become judges, you know, they become justices of the Supreme Court. It's obvious what the Second Amendment says. They're openly defying it at every level of the judiciary. How does this happen?
Well, it happens because law schools aren't teaching the Constitution the way it was written. I mean, that's why you also have three Supreme Court justices who couldn't figure out what the Constitution means.
Yeah, we just replaced one with another one. We replaced a leftist with a Marxist. We get a bad court. In fact, I got a question for Pianki now that he's here, too. I made a comment, I didn't think about this until this morning, but part of the reason I think that Justice Jackson is on the court because she's the good black justice, as opposed to Clarence Thomas, who's the bad black justice. And we want to have, some kind of conformity here to show people, because I think it was, who was it? The surgeon general dude, the brain surgeon, I've forgotten his name. Anyway, you can remind me. But he said that black conservatives are more dangerous than anything to the leftists. And so this seems to me, just a way to sort of confirm people. This is what you're supposed to be like. If you're a black justice, you got to be like you got to be a Marxist like Jackson, as opposed to an independent American patriot like Clarence Thomas. Pianki, what do you think?
Well, I was reading up on Jackson. She was asked earlier, and Jim may know a bit more details, but she agreed with Kavanaugh on a road question. And I was reading, and I posted that some think that she would have voted along with Clarence Thomas in this decision on Roe. So
you mean there's
hope?
Oh my God, she's reading the Constitution. This is wonderful. This is news.
Well, you know, women put a little bit more effort in doing things, digging into things, I think, rather than skirting along the surface. And
so,
you would see that.
Okay.
And you just
had
you talking to Cheryl here, and you heard her response to your question. So let's hope and let's wait and see. All we ask is that they stick to the Constitution. If they do that, everything, the car will go straight right down the road. The plane will fly level and smooth.
If they stuck by the Constitution, three of the justices wouldn't be there because all the decisions would be, you know, wrong, canceled. Well, Shirley, what do you think about that? Do like your women students, do they study more? Do they know their guns better? Have they read the manual? I'm just curious. Bianchi raises an interesting question.
Well, they do have their manual with them if they haven't already read it. But some of them just like to have some, because understand that a lot of my students are first time gun owners,
right?
And they know nothing about it, so they're not going to sit at home and just kind of take it apart. Because you know, what if you can't get it back together? Don't know how it functions. So you know, and then the media puts all this notions into your head that guns just go off. You know, I don't know, bullets jump in them. I don't know. But they give you this
car start
this
by themselves and drive away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's something like that. So they come and they're just open-minded, ready to learn. I think a lot of them ask me what they should carry, and we've already discussed or what they should own. I said, you got to try it before you buy it, if at all possible. See what fits you. What I like doesn't mean that you'll like. What fits me doesn't always fit you. So but I think they've done research to the extent, and I find that a lot of my clients are referrals, and I think that helps a lot because this is a field that, you know, they're a little bit fearful. They're apprehensive.
That's not a bad thing.
A bad experience. So they want someone that's already been through the class with me and that, you know, understand that they know will understand what they're going through.
Listen, my first-time flight students, if they weren't a little bit nervous, I worried about them. You know, going up in an airplane is not a natural thing to do. You know, human beings, you know, don't naturally, you know, fly along the clouds and loop and roll and do all kinds of crazy things. And I didn't do that with my students because I wasn't an aerobatic instructor. I've done it myself, and it's really a kick. I want to do more of it. But the thing is, it's not natural for someone to hop into a box with an engine in front, you know, wings attached, and go fly. Now, afterwards, I don't expect them to be nervous, but the first time, yeah, I do. So I would expect your students that they should be a little nervous, a little apprehensive because they're entering a new world. And that kind of nervousness can be a good thing. You know, I don't see that as a negative at all. And maybe you can, you know, tell people that too. I used to tell my students, I said, you better be a little nervous your first time or I'm going to worry about you. If you're absolutely confident that there's nothing, you know, apprehensive about you hopping into an airplane, we got a problem. You know, I even told that because I had a person that was like that, and it was fascinating. Anyway, I want to get back to Jim, though, because you said something fascinating, that law schools are not teaching the Constitution. I've heard that from Jonathan, too, so this is not the first time. But anyway, any reaction to any of that, Jim? Feel free. We're sort of all over the place this morning.
Yeah, all over the place is not a bad thing.
No, that's true.
I'm actually going to be very interested to see what happens with these cases that got remanded, because my fear is they're going to get sent back to the appellate courts, which wrongly decided them in the first place. The appellate courts are going to pick and choose little words.
Wrongly decide them again? Is that where you're going?
Yeah, they're going to pick and choose and take words and phrases out of context from the Supreme Court decision and then reaffirm what they wrongly decided in the first place, and the cases are going to go right back to the Supreme Court again. But maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't think so, especially with the Ninth Circuit.
Well, the Ninth Circuit's weird. It used to be knee-jerk Marxism. I mean, everything that the government did was right, and everything that the Constitution said was wrong. I mean, it was automatic. But that's not the case anymore. They've changed some of the members. So I think it depends whether it's an en banc, as they say, in other words, the whole circuit, or it's like a three-judge panel. And then, of course, it depends on which three judges. So there's a lot of subjectivity to this.
Yeah, that in a gun case, there will always be the liberal judges who will demand an en banc. And so I don't think you'll anytime in the near future see a Second Amendment case that goes to the Supreme Court that was not decided en banc.
Which gets back to my original question. What is wrong with these people, you know, at these various levels of the judiciary, that something so plain as the Second Amendment, you know, they're overriding with their agenda as opposed to actually reading it? And what the hell is going on in law schools? Well, do you know, have you taken a law school class on the Second Amendment? I'd be curious. And what exactly, you know, they're teaching?
No, I have not. But, you know, the preponderance of law schools, from what I understand from lawyers who I know, are for the most part teaching the liberal philosophy that the Constitution is a constantly evolving and changing document in order to evolve to the changing standards of society.
Yeah, as opposed to rights being eternal, because people don't change even though technology does. Yeah, I should invite Jonathan Mosley, who's constitutional attorney, Second Amendment attorney, you know, all around genius, you know, as far as the law goes. And he has nothing but disdain and contempt for law schools and courts. You know, he's almost, you know, I mean, I'm glad he's a lawyer, but I don't think, you know, he does it because it's the way to help people, you know, not because the profession is particularly honorable when it comes to understanding the Constitution. Which brings us to us here. There's an article I found on writing a bill. And it talks about how anybody can write a bill. I'm not going to go into it now. I might go into it, you know, later on. In fact, Derek's not here, so anybody wants to stick around for a while, feel free. But the idea is anybody can write one, but that doesn't mean it gets anywhere because it still has to go through the legislature. And, of course, that's our whole philosophy here. I'm not trying to change the Constitution. I'm not trying to change how legislation is done. I'm just trying to give much better bills that we consent to as opposed to the crap that's coming out of the lobbyists, the corporations, the special interests, the George Soros crowd, and things like that, including really bad gun legislation, which brings me back to Jim. Is there any really horrible legislation that's coming out to try and get around that wonderful Supreme Court case?
Oh, yeah. All of the liberal states are now getting together to rewrite their firearms laws in ways that they think might possibly satisfy Roberts and Kavanaugh, because that's who they have to swing. So we've gone from the Second Amendment meaning what Justice Kennedy thinks it means to the Second Amendment meaning what Roberts and Kavanaugh thinks it means.
This is the problem with the whole idea of interpreting the Constitution. They have no lawful authority to interpret. Their only authority is what the Constitution says. The Constitution is supreme to them, and I don't think they figured that out yet. So we have to remind them. Pianchi, go ahead.
Well, that's why this has to be taught. I keep putting emphasis on that. You have to teach that young child, and you have to assess those child. If I was if Jim was my father, I would have put him into law school, because I think that's me. I'd rather see Jim sitting on the bench than out there on the range, because of his knowledge and his logical thinking.
Jim, you want to go to law school? You want to change professions? What do you think? Are you up for that? Are you like closer to retirement?
Well, and see, here's the thing, too. What he just described, you got lawyers and also the legislatures in these liberal states are trying to fashion things in order to fit Kavanaugh and Roberts. Well, that's not wrong. Like you may mention that the Constitution is written in stone. I mean, it lasts to infinity.
Until it's amended. It can be amended, but it's not a living document that people can interpret. See, this is the difference. People don't understand that. There is an amendment process. If something changes, in fact, I've proposed an amendment to the Constitution that Congress, that we take away the power of Congress to borrow money, which I think would solve a huge amount of problems. That's an amendment, okay? So the Constitution can be amended, but it cannot be simply interpreted the way a justice wants, because then the justices become supreme to the Constitution by their interpretations rather than the Constitution regulating what they can say in a case. That's what I think the problem
is. It shouldn't be interpreted whatsoever, and I'm with you 100% on that suggestion you just gave. on limiting their ability to borrow money.
Yeah. Well, let's get to Shirley. Oh, I think Shirley, no, Shirley's still there. I think Jim left. Where'd Jim go? Oh, he had to, something happened. Maybe we lost him at the range or something like that. Shirley, what do you think? I know this is off topic, obviously, but that's what we're doing this morning. Can you see supporting an amendment? Can you see DC Project? I don't know if they could support it, that a constitutional amendment that Congress had their power to borrow money be taken away.
I can't answer that question. I don't know the answer to that question as far as, but DC, you know, speaking for myself.
Well, speak for you then.
Know.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about everything that you're talking about with that. But also, as you were, and Jim was, before we lost him, we're talking mm-hmm. about people interpreting the Constitution, and there's no interpretation. It is what it is. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking, what's hitting me right now is, but also, I never would have thought I'd be hearing about a documentary coming out that's it's What Is a Woman?
You have to tell us about the Constitution
not being a living document. It's a document. It says exactly what the Constitution says. It says what it means. It's not to be interpreted. But now
right.
I'm like, but yes, there's a documentary going, What Is a Woman? I thought that was pretty clear cut too.
You're kidding. Tell me about, well, I think so too. I mean, you know, I can tell women from guys. You know, being attracted to women, it's easy. You know, it's a very simple thing. For most of us, it's a very simple thing. It's like the left unnecessarily, or they go to the absurd. They make a position that is so preposterous, and yet people go along with it after a while because they say it long enough. Well, I mean, what really is a woman and a man? Well, XXXY chromosomes. Okay, and if you can't tell the difference, then obviously you haven't hit puberty yet. But where do you know the source of this, Shirley? This is hysterical.
It's the Daily Wire, and it's with
I guess she's looking it up. Why would this even be necessary? Bianca, you ever had a problem telling the difference? Oh, we'll get him to unmute.
About what?
Have you had a problem telling the difference between men and women? Unless someone's actually disguising themselves or you
they
know.
Don't want some people don't. Some people don't like to make waves with some women. Actually, some men, too.
Huh.
Shirley don't like to make waves either. So you can pick up on it.
I just think this
yeah,
is fascinating.
It's a documentary by Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire. I think it's supposed to be coming out today, and I think you have to be a member of Daily Wire. I've heard about it, and I did a little research before the show started today because I'm like, I want to watch that. And then the trailer that they show is, it just, you go, what? Are you kidding me?
Is it making fun of this whole issue or is it actually, is it making fun of it or is it taking it seriously?
No, people are serious. People are serious.
Oh,
I forget how it went. You're a man. There's no determination between a man and a woman. I don't know. This I don't know if she was a psychiatrist. Don't know. Like I said, I watched it just a few minutes before I came on the show, and I went, are you kidding
me? I think I've seen the trailer. I think I know what you're talking about. And there's a woman that couldn't define what women are, and there's a, you know, and then can men get pregnant? Well, yes, we think. We're not sure. I mean, this is absurd. This is an extension of the go ahead. Yeah.
And a couple times in the trailer, they just walk off. He asks them a question, they walk off. And they're like, what the heck? Do you have an answer? No, you're just going to walk. You don't like the question, so you don't. It's got to be pretty interesting.
Well, they never like the questions. You never. They want you just to accept. Okay, so what's behind this? What's behind this genderizing? There's a new term I just made up. Where people don't, you know, especially kids, you know, they're telling five-year-old boys they're girls and five-year-old girls they're boys. It's like every possible, this is my theory, every possible way to strip somebody's identity and individuality is being taken away. And one of the strongest identities, especially for kids, is whether they're boys or girls. You know, that's one of your very first things. You identify with your family, your country, your sex. You know, you identify with various different things, your language. You know, and those are how kids define themselves. But if you start taking all those things away, how are they going to define themselves? And my conclusion is they're not. And then, of course, then the left can define them, and that's where the problem comes in. Shirley, what do you think?
If you see a...
Go ahead, Bianchi, and then I'll get Shirley.
If you see, I'm seeing movies now talking about societies with women warriors. If you got a society like that, something seriously wrong with it. Because
what,
now
have you seen
Wonder
Woman?
Women in a position.
Have you seen Wonder Woman?
Well, if you're putting women gladiators, for instance.
Oh, my goodness.
Come on now.
Okay.
If you got a society where you got women gladiators, women, your first front line is women, something's wrong with the society. What the heck happened to the men?
Good question. Shirley?
I think I'm just going to throw out my thoughts on this confusion. Get to our young people. Do you want to be referred to as he or she? And these kids are so young, they're not concerned about that. They want to be kids. We're taking away that
yep.
essence of being a child. We're confusing them at an early age. So then what happens? And this is just, I don't have any psychological background to any of this,
mm-hmm.
but then if they're confused and they keep growing up and then all of a sudden that confusion just keeps festering and then they become, maybe they get bullied because they just all of a sudden have mental issues and then they want to commit suicide because you're confusing them at such a young age and you're not even mature enough to make a decision and you're making them decide something so crucial and preposterous to you, a man and a woman, there's a difference. There's always been a difference. It's not like it can be debated. I think they're just getting the young kids so confused, and then as they grow up, then they're just mentally unstable. And you know, maybe that because even Representative Higgins, he spoke about years ago. You know, we had shotguns and rifles on the back of our pickup trucks, and we didn't have mass killings that are going on right now. So what changed? What's changed the mentality of our youth? The way
yeah.
we're bringing up society, something is wrong there. It's not the firearm, as we all know, because you know we're pro Second Amendment. It's not the firearm. We have to look at what's causing the people to react like this. But that takes too much time. It's not an easy answer to what they think is going to solve the problem.
Well,
so,
then the causes
yeah.
would have to change. You know, the problem is the government
exactly.
schools. Which are trying to feminize men or young boys, that doesn't work. The lack of fathers. Well, that would attack the Great Society and the welfare program. So the left doesn't want that. You know, the pharmaceutical industry and the psychiatric industry, you know, pushing all their antidepressants and things and Ritalin and sex change drugs and things like that. Well, they don't want that because they're donors to the campaigns of the leftists. So for many reasons, there are vested interests that are working against us, that are pro, you know, changing society. I mean, men, you know, where are the Boy Scouts? You know, where are the boys' clubs? Where are the leadership things? You know, especially for boys because of the absence of fathers. Where do boys learn to be men? And the question and the answer is they don't. You know, that's what gangs are all about. But when boys were carrying firearms, I don't know how many girls carried firearms in their pickup trucks for high school. I'm sure, you know, some did, but I'm sure there was more of a guy thing. They have fathers at home who taught them how to shoot, who taught them how to hunt. And it's like, hey, we're bringing home dinner, you know, and got a couple of rabbits. You know, I mean, it's a very different world. New York's boys used to have 22 rifles. You know, the rifle team would carry their rifles to school on the subways. Nothing ever happened. You know, you probably researched the stories. So what changed was the society changed and the boys changed. You know, because boys are the ones, these young men are the ones who are doing the shooting. So obviously there's a problem with young men. We're not raising young men properly. That's where the problem is. And neither the family situation nor the schools nor society nor anything really reinforces boys to be good men. That's where I think the problem is. That's why we're having these shootings. Shirley?
I totally agree. Totally agree. I mean, yeah. Why else? Why in the world do I have to have a documentary saying, what is a woman?
Well, I mean, you should, you know, write in protest. this is hysterical. You know, I know, Bianchi knows. 99.99% of the people know. The only ones who are denying this have a vested agenda in it. You know, why did Judge Jackson, before she got on the Supreme Court, you know, say she doesn't know? And she says, well, I'm not a biologist. You know, and of course the answer is, well, I'm not a meteorologist, but I know when it's raining. You know, I mean,
I sent you the trailer for that documentary. But
yeah.
I'm going to have to be heading out here shortly.
Okay.
So I just, before I go, I want to wish you all a very happy Happy Thanksgiving. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah.
Happy 4th
Do you want
July.
To join us? If you want to join us for our reading of the Declaration of Independence Monday, just let me know and I'll put you on the list and I'll be dividing it up probably tomorrow and giving everybody their part. So you want to do it? Good. Okay, I'll put you down.
Yay. Well, I have an 8 o'clock appointment and I'll probably be done about 9. You said you're starting at 9, so I might have to do it on the road. So, yeah, let me know what time slot you would put me in, and I'll see if I can work.
Yeah, do it on the road.
Yeah, it only takes about...
Are you
going to
be on the range at 9 o'clock, or...?
What is that? I might just have to go
to
the range
be on the...
just so I can have some gunfire and a sounds of freedom in the background.
Yeah, that's what we want. Please.
Okay. All right, I got your message.
Okay,
I tend to be off Facebook once the show starts just because it takes up computer space. Shirley, thank you. This has been a great report. This has been fun.
And I'll look forward to chatting with you guys next Friday, if not sooner.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks, Shirley. Take care.
Bye.
Goodbye. All right. So, yeah, this is what makes Fridays fun because we can get all over the place. And I think the fact that, of course, with all my reports, we all get along so well that there's a lot of freedom here. To interact on all kinds of different levels. We cover cars, guns, what the woman. It's been an interesting day. All right, Pianki, it's you and me for the rest of the show. Derek can't make it. And so he's got a very interesting adventure, which I hope to be able to talk about. I got to make sure I clear it with him first. But, yes, that's going on. It's quite fascinating. Let me play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. And then I want to get into the Plyler v. Doe decision. I got a little bit on the EPA decision, something I want to talk to Pianki about. And then anything else anybody wants to join us on. And the 8 o'clock hour, I have set it aside. Anybody wants to be a guest host and actually try Talk Radio, invite all your friends to call in and you can give it a shot. So this is – I've got my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece on Federalist number 12. I'm going to make Anti-Federalist number 12 tomorrow, so I'll have that for next week. And, of course, we have our 4th of July. We are going to be live. And I'll be doing a live reading with whoever else wants to. I'll see if I can talk Pianki into reading the Declaration of Independence. And that'll be in the 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central Time hours. And West Coast, it'll be really early. Back in a bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Even the title of Federalist Number 12 is bad. The utility of the Union in respect to revenue. First of all, the Union was not created for Alexander Hamilton, who wrote Federalist Number 12, to rule it, nor was the Union created for his utility, nor for the Union to generate revenue. Hamilton says, "The prosperity of commerce is now perceived and acknowledged by all enlightened statesmen to be the most useful as well as the most productive source of national wealth, and has accordingly become a primary object of their political cares." Such grand assumptions. All enlightened statesmen? So those who disagree must be stupid by comparison. Commerce is supposed to bring wealth. That's why we engage in it. But commerce is for private wealth, entrepreneurial wealth, investor wealth, and more. It is not for governed national wealth unless the commerce is nationalized. Maybe that's what Hamilton had in mind when he talked about commerce becoming, quote, a primary object of their political cares. Hamilton and the Federalists appeared to believe that not only the Constitution and the federal government should serve elitists like himself, but the commerce of the nation should also. I can see why the anti-Federalists were so popular, and why people are encouraged by government to study only the Federalist Papers. Consider this paragraph. The ability of a country to pay taxes must always be proportioned in a great degree to the quantity of money in circulation and to the celerity with which it circulates. Commerce, contributing to both these objects, must of necessity render the payment of taxes easier and facilitate the requisite supplies to the treasury. In other words, don't tax more than a certain portion of the money supply so taxes flow in easily. So the goal here is to tax not on the necessary expenditures of government, but on how great a proportion the federal government can tax to facilitate supplies of money to the Treasury most easily. It's also interesting that Hamilton does not trust the states at all regarding commerce or anything else, which is ironic because it's the states that delegate all power to the federal government through the Constitution. But Hamilton is so contemptuous of the states. He thinks their purpose is to conspire to commit commerce in a way the federal government could not tax. Again, according to Hamilton, like people, businesses are to serve the federal government. He says, "The relative situation of these states, the number of rivers with which they are intersected, and of bays that wash their shores, the facility of communication in every direction, the affinity of language and manners, the familiar habits of intercourse, all these are circumstances that would conspire to render an illicit trade between them a matter of little difficulty, and would ensure frequent evasions of the commercial regulations of each other." Stating things not at all in evidence that they are in fact evident, Hamilton once again claims that only a national, not federal, national, as in a top-down supremacist government, can be trusted to collect the taxes and keep the treasury full. Whereas the states, which are sovereign entities, will break into confederacies and ruin all Hamilton's plans to run the economy with the national government. He concludes, "It is therefore evident that one national government would be able, at much less expense, to extend the duties on imports beyond comparison further than would be practicable to the states separately or to any partial confederacies." The only thing that is evident to me is that Alexander Hamilton wants a strong national government so his fellow elitists can control the economy and put away money in the treasury based on how much money they can get away with putting in the treasury and use for their own purposes. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code WYL to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying.
So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Panglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Panglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Panglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. All right, we are back, and because Derek is dealing with some very interesting news, which I wish I could give you, but I got to talk to him first. Let me make Pianchi's line back live again. We've got an hour and 10 minutes. We got a chance to chat rather than our usual, 25, 35 minutes at the end of the show. So before I get started with a multitude of issues, Pianchi, anything on your mind this week that as we do our weekly summary?
Let me tell you some things I try to do with my kids. I would every day, what's the word for today? And they would recite an article of the Constitution. Like one day they would say that, what's the word for today? A well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. So that's how you instill these things into your child. That's another way. It's not the only way, but it's an exercise that can be done in school.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just thinking because I raised a daughter, and she always was a daughter. She knew she was a daughter. There was never a gender confusion. There was never a question about that. And we talked about everything, which didn't mean she I didn't encourage her. I encouraged her to do everything, whether it was a guy thing or a girl thing. And I think especially with daughters, although I think that's changing now. Now I think we do need to encourage sons to do more things because, guys are being told, well, you're toxically masculine. You shouldn't do this. It's bad to, want to shoot guns and, do sword fights and duel and climb mountains and do all the things that, guys, we just had this adventurous spirit. And I think that's been totally destroyed. So I think we've got the daughter thing down where we're actually helping our daughters to be anything they can, whether it's, learn how to shoot a .22 rifle or go find the latest Berets or whatever it is. I mean, my daughter did both. She did girl stuff. She did what you might think of as guy stuff. And it was never really a difference. We never made a distinction. We just did stuff. We did archery, and we also, watched, chick films, as she got older. It was fascinating. I just never made a distinction. She knew who she was. So that was never an issue, never shy of doing anything either or trying something, Yeah.
When I was in school, we had learned how to recite Patrick Henry's speech. Mm-hmm. We had to learn how to recite The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. Mm-hmm. This is a black school. We have black students in a black school. Mm-hmm. And this was like maybe the fourth grade. And that's something that needs to be in every learning experience in a lesson plan in school. Children should be able to recite these articles,
I can never do that. My memory sucks. I mean, I can make up anything. I can explain anything. Let me talk. I can do the extemporaneous thing, but I cannot
remember. Well, it should
remember.
Be a punishment if you don't know how. But okay. Nowadays they use this principle called flipped classrooms. Where you listen to a lecture that's given by a professor at home on your spare time, when you're in a restaurant, when you're on a train, when you're jogging. Then when you get to school, you break off into groups and you discuss that lesson that you learned. Well, the same thing, you don't have to learn the entire article. It can be broken up amongst two or three students. And that way you can show some camaraderie on a principle as valuable as the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, it's interesting you mentioned The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, which I read April 19th, you know, where we did the poetry written in combat by soldiers on Memorial Day. You know, we're going to, I read I Have a Dream by Martin Luther King on Martin Luther King Day. We've got July 4th. We're going to read the Declaration of Independence. You know, on Labor Day, I'm going to do labor history. You know, I mean, so the holidays to me, I don't take the holidays off generally. I use them for what they're intended, about whatever that holiday is about. So that's kind of interesting. But I had a question for you, though, on black schools. If we have a society that is trying to make, you know, especially the leftist, or we have a leftist society that's trying to make a conforming behavior of black Americans, if the school is all black, you know, then there's no standard. But, you know, if every student's black, how do you define black behavior? Because obviously every student's different, whereas black students in a white school, you know, the left can say, well, this is how the good black students behave and the bad black students behave, you know, this way. Just like the same with the judges, the good black justice, you know, Jackson, compared to the bad black justice, you know, Clarence Thomas, the conservative, you know. But if you're an all black school, you can't use that criteria because he's black. I just find that interesting. It's like all boys schools, you know, you don't have a, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the composition of the classroom is going to be dictated by who lives in the neighborhood. That's how that is. Now, what you see in these experiments, you see in these experiments where they tried to take black children and bust them into white communities. And Clarence
Thomas part of that.
Himself.
Yeah, I was part of that.
Clarence Thomas himself spoke out against that.
Yeah.
Very, very in a case called Jenkins versus Missouri. But it doesn't matter who's sitting in the classroom. You still can learn. And I'm saying that for my child, if it's not going, I'm going to try to get it to go in a classroom where all the children are having the same experience, that way they come out with the same knowledge. If you want to have patriots to this country and to this Constitution, you have to do the things necessary in order to instill that patriotism in that young child. Because if you don't, then when they come out and go to law school, they're going to be subjected to a professor that's going to tell them that the Constitution is a living document.
Yeah. It was the most fascinating classes I took in college was constitutional law. And that's kind of what started me on this path that eventually ended up with Action Radio. And it was by a liberal college professor that taught exactly that. The Constitution is a living document meant to be adapted to the various crises of human affairs. And I kind of internalized that, and I thought, well, wait a minute. You know, because eventually I applied logic and reason. I said, well, that's not entirely true. And then I went to Washington on an internship, which is my other great experience that, you know, eventually led to Action Radio. And so it was fascinating to see how the government actually worked compared with what I was taught of how it worked. And it was interesting to actually read the Constitution compared to what I was being taught about the Constitution, you know, through various Supreme Court cases. I mean, that was one of my greatest professors. He taught me how to think in ways that I still apply today. You know, of using logic and reason. We have different conclusions, but that's not the point. You taught me how to think. And so although I don't see the Constitution as a living document, I see it as anything but. I see it as the supreme law of the land to which the Supreme Court is subordinate, to which the Constitution is subordinate, you know, which makes the idea of interpreting the Constitution unconstitutional. You can't interpret the
Absolutely.
Supreme law of the land in a way to change it. Go ahead, yeah. Feel free to expand.
If you're teaching young people to make essays, within the body of the essay, they quote pro-Second Amendment court cases, as in such and such, such and such. Their quotes are articles of the Confederation. Their quotes are portions and amendments of the Constitution. Their quotes are articles of the Bill of Rights. If you get them adapted and get them coordinated where this is just natural for them. And I mean, just think what it would be if you read an essay by a young person and you see these contained within the textual structure of the essay. My God, this man was quoting the Second Amendment in his essay. What does that say? See, that reveals a lot. It reveals a lot about the parent structure, the home structure. They didn't just read, get that, listen to Dr. Oz or Oprah Winfrey, especially Whoopi Goldberg. They're coming from a functional family.
You know, it's interesting that the functional together families are the ones that are generally more conservative, and I think the liberal split up, you know, do what you want kind of families tend to sort of go that way. But it's interesting, this whole idea of interpreting the Constitution in these gun cases. This is why I asked Jim the question. You know, these courts that decided it wrongly the first time, are they going to decide it wrongly again? And he's like, yeah, probably. You know, because they put their bias in, they put their interpretation in. Now, and of course, the left would argue, well, you're putting your interpretation on the Constitution too. No, I'm not. I'm reading it. You tell me what other meaning, you know, can be to the Second Amendment when it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, can't be touched. The right of the people to keep and, you know, to own and carry firearms can't be touched, not just inside the home, but anywhere. You know, what's the, you know, where's your disagreement? Or when it says a well-regulated militia, which means a well-equipped citizen, you know, army or armed group, you know, is necessary for the security of a free state. Not as optional. They actually said it was necessary. Well, here's a question for you.
Well,
go ahead. I'll ask you my big question. Yeah, go ahead.
My grandson and a classmate, friend of his today, they participated for the school. They represented the school for a Missouri Constitution debate amongst other schools in, you know, the state. In both years, it's his senior year and his junior year, they brought home trophies to their school.
Oh, wow, that's wonderful.
And they were the only, they were the only black kids involved in that. So what it showed.
Well, you don't think with your skin color. You think with your brain. So, yeah, that's a, you know.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that if you want results, then you have to do the things necessary in order to achieve those results. It's like baking a cake. If you put in one ingredient, where if you put buttermilk in it, when it's supposed to be whole milk, then it's going to be different. It's not going to be the way you anticipated it to be. And that same thing goes on with creating tomorrow's society, which is going to consist of the young people today.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, try half and half in your scrambled eggs. They come out much better. I discovered that a couple of years ago.
When it comes out better than your cornbread, too.
Oh, that's interesting. See, I don't do bread yet. I still have some more pounds to lose. But, yeah, that's very interesting. Okay. Anyway, the Second Amendment, I think, I always find fascinating. That's my litmus test. That's my canary in the coal mine. If you're against that, then you're probably against everything else in the Constitution. But I think it was written backwards. So what I don't understand is why they said a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. What could have much more easily said, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, you know, well, I don't know. I don't know how you say it, because you don't want to say because a well-regulated militia is necessary for a free state. But I wouldn't even put that well-regulated militia part in there. I think all it does is confuse the amendment. Man,
no,
I understand. You know, why?
Because the states are countries. It's not the National Guard that's your militia, which consists of the people. And by the way, that should be the quote of the day for classrooms.
Okay.
That's the way you learn. You understand what I'm – you see what I'm trying to get at.
So couldn't you say the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed? That would not have been enough?
Well, they're going to do that anyway. But you got to have some sort of call to arms, and that has to be your militia. Pennsylvania is a country.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina is a country. Think they was country before they come states, right?
Well, they could have been called. It's interesting. We could have been called the United Nations instead of the United States, which would be very interesting, or the United Countries. That would have made more sense if they'd actually.
Yeah, but the first one stood alone until other countries formed, and then the countries became what we call state. But they still a country. They have their own constitution. They got their own legislative body, they got the judicial, they got their own militia.
You know, what defines the country? It's got borders. It's got an independent government. It has the ability to tax. Has the ability to write laws and regulations. And has a judiciary. I mean, that's pretty much what defines the country. Well, you're going to find this Supreme Court case really interesting. But here's my theoretical question. So the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia, which means a well-equipped group of armed citizens, you know, is necessary to the security of a free state. Now, I don't think state is capitalized. I think state is lowercase. Let me just double check that. It may be capitalized, but either way, it would affect my question somewhat. But we always think of free state as it is capitalized. Okay. So I think that they're meaning a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. That meant the states, you know, North Carolina, you know, Rhode Island, things like that. So, but what if it meant a free state as a free condition? And if it was a lowercase s, a free state, you know, like what are the three states of matter? You know, gas, liquid, and solid. Those are the three states of matter. If you have a state of hunger, you have a condition of hunger. That's the state that you're in. It's a physical state. It's not a geographic state. So the question is, could you say that the Second Amendment, when it says well-regulated militia, in other words, a group of armed citizens, a non-governmental group of armed citizens, is necessary to the security of the state of freedom as a condition, well, as opposed to a geographic entity?
The citizens are going to be armed anyway, as the British found out after they burned Washington, D.C., burned the White House, and they tried to march to New Orleans. All along the way, armed citizens was resisting them.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, what if it's necessary to the state of, not the state of freedom, you know, as per a geographic state like, you know, Texas, but what if it means a condition? What if it means in order to be free, in order to maintain the condition of freedom or the state of freedom, as in, you know, solid, liquid, gas, a state or condition, that group citizens have to be armed and they have to be able to organize? What if that's what they really meant?
If you in Florida, no, Florida had a lecture chair called Old Sparky. That would be unheard of in Maine. That would be unheard of in Maine because you got two different sets of people. See, the United
Alabama.
States.
But you're still missing what I'm talking about.
They got Biden alligators there.
Yeah.
But,
okay, because you're missing my point a little bit, and it's hard to explain this. Replace the word state with condition. What if instead of state, it said a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of your freedom or to maintain your freedom? What if it said that? In other words, a free condition or a condition of freedom instead of a free state. So if the Second Amendment said, I'm pulling it up once again here. It said a well-regulated militia being necessary to the condition of freedom, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. What if it meant the condition of freedom, not a free state as in a geographic? What if it meant a condition? In other words, the condition of being free, the state of being free, of the state of being free, not a state which is free. What if they really said that the Second Amendment is necessary, that you can't be free without the ability to not only keep and bear arms,
but
organize.
You're free of biological males and go in female bathrooms today, but you couldn't do that back then.
But that's not a freedom. That's an abuse of power. No, it's not a freedom.
No,
it's any more than here's another one too. And in fact, I had a list of things that the Supreme Court couldn't declare. You know, they're sort of, you know, crossing all kinds of boundaries here. You know, when the Supreme Court declared that gay marriage was legal, well, they couldn't do that because gay marriage is not a right.
They done it back in the late 1700s.
Yeah,
so you're trying to look at things today and go back in history and remodel them. No, it has to be the way the societal norms were at the time.
Yeah, see, I disagree.
Now, like you say,
I think the principles can be amended.
Yeah.
The principles are absolute. In other words, the state of freedom, the condition of freedom, is an absolute that transcends all human history. You know, if the social norm was slavery, or if the social norm was tyranny, or if the social norm was feudalism, or the social norm was indentured servitude, like it was in a lot of this country, if that was the norm, am I going to base freedom on a norm of tyranny or indentured servitude? No, I'm not. So I don't. I'm there, it's like,
well,
the idea that we judge
the
rights in terms of history.
In.
What's that?
It depends on the country. Hmm. Let me say something. For instance, in my wife, she's Awe in Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
She's my property. My son is my property. She told me that. They say, in our society, I'm your property.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it ain't a derogatory thing, but that's the way it's looked at. I must maintain and protect my property. Now, is that the same in the United States?
No.
It would be deplorable. But it was talked about, and because of due process, it was in slavery. It was property. It was property where they came from, so when they came here, they were still property.
Yeah. See, a lot of women would argue that that they were considered property because they couldn't vote. You know, up until the middle of the 1900s, you know, women couldn't get a credit card unless their husband approved it. You know, couldn't start businesses. So there was a lot
in this
of, you know,
society.
Yeah.
In her society, they don't have credit cards. At least they didn't. You know, they do now because it's modernized. But So you cannot take what your experiences. That's why it would be dangerous if you could get in a time machine and go back, because it would be very, very dangerous.
You wouldn't fit right in. Well, I'll tell you something interesting I heard last night. The Tucker Carlson had a fascinating chat with the president of Brazil, who's the only world leader that refused the COVID jab, so he's still pretty healthy. He almost got killed by a leftist assassin, and of course the leftist judges did everything possible to make sure that the assassin got off. But he said something really interesting when it comes to abortion. He says that, you know, he really approved of getting rid of Roe, didn't understand why we had it for so long. But in Brazil, their culture is that that a baby is looked upon as a gift to the woman. It's not looked upon as the woman's property. So this whole idea of my body, my choice, you know, doesn't apply in Brazil, because as far as they're concerned, there's the woman's body and there's the baby's body. Yes, they're together, but the same, there's two independent people there. And that's kind of what we're coming to here, finally, about time. But it's just interesting that they've always had that belief. So they never had a Roe v. Wade. They never had this idea that women and doctors can run the lives of themselves, which is fine, but also have life or death over the baby, and life and financial decisions and fatherhood over the man. They don't even think about that. Because that baby is not the woman's property. They're separate.
Yeah, but
it's interesting.
That's the logical thinking. That's not a logical thinking. That is sort of a popular thinking here in the United States because of the breakdown of a lot of institutional norms that don't exist anymore. Hard, like I said, that was taught in the classroom.
Mm.
So it's left up for alterations, is what you're saying. And then those who want to tear down the – see, it's part of the fabric of the United States and what it was in the 1700s. I know he had some bad things. He had some good things, but that's natural. If you build something, it can't be all good. It's got to have some negativity to it. So what happened is that things have been changing gradually, the breaking down of the fabric of the United States. If we look back, we can see – when things begin to change, even though we lived it, we didn't notice it. It's like the frog being in the water.
I think people noticed it, but I didn't think that it was going to be as bad. I think that the government schools got more power, and people went, yeah, okay, fine. You know, I think people saw the breakdown of the family, the separation of fathers, and like, yeah, it's a problem, but it's not that big a deal yet. Well, now it's a big deal. People sell illegal aliens. Yeah, there's a few in this country, but it's not, you know, it hasn't really changed a whole lot. Well, now we got 2 million this year. You know, I mean, these things are being thrown at us very strongly. Well, I wanted to do an EPA, but I want to do an environmental impact statement of illegal aliens. I think that'd be fascinating. Anyway, I want to touch on this. What was interesting about the whole idea of that thought of, you know, the Supreme Court in what they call substantive due process, which is code for we're just going to make it up. We're going to interpret the Constitution, which they can't do. We're going to make up rights, which they can't do. And we're going to say that they're always there, which they can't do. But it's interesting that you look at when they say that the court created, you know, gay marriage as a right, which is fascinating because marriage itself isn't a right. Nobody has a right to be married. It's a contract between two people, you know, sanctioned by God, licensed by the state. And people will argue whether it should be licensed. And I would argue that too, but that's not the point. The point is that anything that's a contract can't be a right because there are restrictions on it. There are conditions on it. you know, there are conditions on being married. You know, the basic one is, you know, you don't cheat, you know, you don't abuse your spouse, you know, there's, you know, violence, threats, you know, nasty stuff like that. You know, you're supposed to be on good behavior as much as possible. But that's a contract. And if it's a contract, it can't be a right, because you're contracted to do certain things. That's what makes a marriage, you know, between a man and a woman, sanctioned by God, licensed by the state. So if marriage is a contract, if marriage is not a right, how could the Supreme Court establish a right for gay people when marriage itself isn't a right? I just found that an interesting thought. As I throw it back to you, Pianki's thinking. It's like, huh, unless he left
well,
us for
I was
her.
Writing a note. But
oh,
you're
okay,
absolutely
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But see, here's the thing. Like, for instance, people think that, like, for instance, Clarence Thomas. Blacks call Clarence Thomas all these different names because they
Uncle Thomas?
Expect it from
I think
him.
I heard that the other day. Uncle Thomas, is that what they're calling
yeah,
him now?
Because yeah, because they expect it for him to be act out in a certain way.
Yeah.
But no, he speaks to the Constitution. Even though, see, they say that he was against affirmative action, which was designed to help him. Well, no, he said that affirmative action, the way it's used, is unconstitutional.
Yeah. It's not designed to help him.
You could be on a bus going to Miami,
mm-hmm,
but the bus goes down through Louisiana first rather than going straight over to Florida. I mean, it'll get you there sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do, jump off the bus?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and this
so even though it was unconstitutional, he didn't have a way to – I mean, he's on the bus going from A to B. So what is he supposed to do, jump off and say, hey, no, we can't do this? No, he just wrote it out until the proper time came where he could work to make things, put it back on the right track.
Yeah, it's interesting. All the time in the Supreme Court, he's now finally getting vindicated and getting to influence these decisions and write these opinions that couldn't have been written, you know, when we had more leftist people on the court. So that's why it's really great that, you know, Trump got appointed. The jury's still out on Kavanaugh, big time. I'm not convinced he's that good, and I don't think he is. I think Roberts has the same problem as Jim talked about earlier. But it's fascinating what's going on the court right now. Well, here's a case for you. I want to get on to this court. There's a case that hasn't been talked about because Justice Thomas talked about, you know, going over things that haven't need looking at again. You know, Gary's, some of the other cases, things like that. There is a case, and I want to talk about this. I'll talk about the EPA Monday, but I want to spend some time in this case right now. After all, I titled the show after it, which is, let me pull up my show title here, Plyler v. Doe, Supreme Court case keeping illegals in your school. Now, I didn't know this until I just started doing a little research that Governor Abbott of Texas has said it's time to revisit this case. This is one of the most dangerous cases and one of the least reported cases in the country. Plyler was the superintendent, I think, of Dallas schools. And what he said was illegal aliens, you know, are taking up space in our schools. They're costing us money. You know, it's an illegal use of taxpayer funds to people that, you know, can't be here. And so what he did was he started charging them $1,000. Well, the case made it to the Supreme Court, and the leftists, and there were a bunch of them at the time, said, you can't do that. They said that, just to summarize it real briefly, then I'll get into this article. They said that illegal aliens are people. Because they're people, you know, they're afforded constitutional rights. Okay. So this is where you take one premise that is true and apply it to another premise that makes it not true. Okay. So the premise that illegal aliens are people is obvious. Okay. Because that, I've forgotten, there's a term for this in debate. We take a true premise and then use that to back up a false one. So the true premise is that illegal aliens, you know, are people. Well, of course they are. You know, that's not an issue. But then the Supreme Court said, well, because they're people, they're entitled to constitutional rights if they're in the United States. Not true. You know, because as I've said over and over again, people cannot have rights in a place they're not allowed to be in. Anyway, so Plyler v. Doe is the case, and I'm going to talk about this. I'll have a press release on it. It really needs to be revisited, and it needs to be overturned. Because if you want to do anything about illegal aliens, talk about to control their own borders, the first thing the states need is the power to keep illegal alien children out of their government schools for the purpose of saving them for American citizens and lawful immigrants. That's what we need. And there'll be one more reason for illegal aliens not to be here. So you combine civil asset forfeiture, which I've talked about before, and you combine Plyler, you overturn Plyler v. Doe, so school systems can say, nope, can't come here, sorry, You know, you're not allowed to be in the country. We're not going to educate your kids. You know, you're not supposed to be here. You're not going to build a life for yourselves here. Get the hell out. You know, that's a case that has to be overturned. Bianchi, what do you think?
He's I agree. Again.
Okay. He's writing letters. You know, or writing notes. I'm sorry. No, what are you writing down there?
Because,
you keep busy or what?
You know, people that come to your show, they have to, one of the requirements is not only to be fully dressed, but they have to have pencil and paper.
Yeah, you really do. I do. You should see the amount of notes that I take.
You got to have notes.
I've got like 6 notebooks beside me since I started the show that have already been filled with notes. So it looks like we have a new caller.
Absolutely.
Somebody called yesterday, which was really stupid, and they made obscene comments. And I thought, what kind of an idiot does with our world's greatest doctor panel? They said that, you know, they came on saying they were President Trump, and then so forth. I immediately, you know, denied it. I thought, well, that was stupid. Why'd they do that? So I asked my doctor. I said, do you want to let this guy talk more of this? Yeah, okay, fine. But then he dropped an F-bomb, and I said, well, that's it. Idiot. Yeah, shouldn't have done that. So I'm going to try this new caller. So this is my warning to my new caller. Be a good caller. Be a good caller. You can stick around. Be a not good caller, and you know what happens. All right. So our new caller. Who we got here?
Good morning, Mr. Greg. Can you hear me?
I can. Who's this?
Pastor Don, Jr., CEO. I'm not a new caller. I've been around for a very long time.
You've got a new phone number,
Pastor
Don. You got a new phone number. You keep changing your phone number. How am I going to keep track of you?
Yeah. I move, man. I move 1,000 miles an hour, but I just call to support the show, and I call to listen in.
Okay.
So I'm definitely ready.
Do you have any comments on what we said so far, or do you want to listen in for a bit? I mean, you're welcome to.
I want to listen in. I want to test the water and make sure I don't step on no toes.
We see you're supposed to listen before you call. Because once you call, I go ahead and put you on the air. So blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Okay, now that you're here, what you want to do, just in case there's background noise, just mute your phone line, and when you want to join us, feel free. Just speak right up. So let me get Josie who's on the line, too. And Josie, what do you think so far? What's your comment?
Hey, good morning. I think it's wrong once the illegals arrive, we're catering to them, and that's not good because we don't cater to the American people that they have the right to get help if we have to help them. And we are giving food stamps. Now in California, they want to give them medical help free to all the illegals. I mean, these mm-hmm. people have lost their mind, and I'm just very upset about that.
No, they want to do
and
a replacement.
And I'm a legal Latina, so I can get away to say that, so they don't call me racist or Uncle Tom like they're saying to Clarence Thomas, you know.
Hey, I'm a legal Canadian. ooh, great North, eh? You know, so I came from Canada. Bob, Australia. G'day. How's it going? So I've already had 3 accents in the course of my life. You know, so that's why I'm kind of homogenized now. Yeah. So, and this is, but I want to get to this case, Plywood Doe, because it's really not that well known. So I want to get this article, and I fully support overturning this and allowing the states to do what they should do, which is keep illegal aliens out of the government schools. And that's a violation of our rights as Americans. We have a right to a country without illegal aliens. We have a right to not pay people that have no right to be here. We have a right to schools that are not teaching people whose sole purpose is to subvert our country. You know, by subverting our laws. So let me give you a little thing. I found this in Law and Crime, a Dan Abrams production. I don't know who he is. This is by Elura Nanos, N-A-N-O-S. This is from May 5th of 2022, so just a couple months ago. So this is after SCOTUS leak, Texas Governor Greg Abbott says it's time to resurrect and challenge ruling which allowed children of undocumented immigrants, in other words, illegal aliens, to attend public schools. I have to do some translating because she uses some really, you know, non-applicable words here like undocumented and, you know, non-citizen and things like that. She says, in the immediate aftermath of the leaked Supreme Court draft opinion in Dobbs v. Jackson, Women's Health Organization, that's the Roe v. Wade case, all right, Texas Governor Greg Abbott said Wednesday that the Lone Star State is ready to challenge a 40-year-old decision requiring Texas to provide free public education, in other words, taxpayer-funded, to the children of, he says, she is undocumented immigrants, but of course these are known as illegal aliens. She says, in an appearance on the Joe Pags show, and I've listened to his show on weekends, reacting to the news on the SCOTUS leak, Governor Abbott specifically referred to the Supreme Court 1982 decision in Plywood v. Doe. That's why I've got details on this case I'll get to in a bit. He says, here's a quote of I guess this is it, Governor Abbott, I think we will resurrect that case and challenge this issue again, because originally it took place in Texas, I think it was Dallas. where Plyler was the superintendent. We will challenge this issue again because the expenses are extraordinary and the times are different than when Plan V Doe was issued many decades ago. Well, that's not the issue, Governor. The issue is legality. Supreme Court cannot force any school district to educate criminals. That's the issue. It's not a question of how expensive they are. It's a question of they can't be here. So he's doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Pianchi, we'll go Pianchi, Pastor Don, and then Josie. Pianchi?
Well, you're absolutely right. I know the case very well, and I have said that it was ridiculous. And let me tell you another point about the case. Refugees can come to Texas and attend those colleges and pay in-state tuition.
Mm-hmm. That's wrong, too.
But my grandson coming from Missouri, going to Texas would have to pay out-state tuition, which is double.
See, that violates equal protection. That violates this 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause because they're giving privileges to illegal aliens or refugees over American citizens. So that in itself is a violation.
Absolutely. And then you got these illegals that haven't paid into the monetary process that's formulated in order to pay for public schools.
Doesn't matter.
Government schooling.
Doesn't matter. I mean, I make this contention all the time. Illegal aliens cannot pay taxes. Okay, they cannot use that as a way to erase their crime of being here illegally by somehow buying their way in. That's called bribery. That's graft. That's corruption.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's piling one bad thing up onto another bad thing until pretty soon the damn thing is so high it can't do anything but fall over.
Yeah. That's like a bank robber stealing $1 million and paying the interest on that back to the bank. But they're still keeping $1 million. You can't do that. You can't pay your way out of your crime. Pastor Don, do you want to get on this discussion? What do you think of the Plyler v. Doe decision and the Supreme Court mandating that illegal alien kids be educated in our schools? You want to jump in on this one? Going once, going twice. He's still listening. Josie, further comments, and then I'll get more into the case. Because it's a fascinating
I disagree completely.
With what?
They don't have no rights. They're illegal here. They should not be getting nothing. And that's why the incentive, the criminal Biden is telling all these people to come in that they're going to get everything for free. Of course, people are coming from all over the world. The freebies are in America. While the American people are sweating to make a living, to pay for taxes, they're stealing all our money and giving it away.
Yeah.
That's not fair for the American people at all.
So you don't agree with our opinions. You disagree with the court case, just to clarify for people.
The court case.
Yeah. Oh, you might be interested, too. We've got Colombia and Ecuador is back listening to us. So we're expanding your report.
Oh, wow.
So we have Venezuela, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, and then Central America, we have Costa Rica, we have Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Belize, Mexico. They're all listening.
Wow.
We have Jamaica, we have Haiti,
Colombia,
all these places are listening. So we're big in Central and South America. Yeah, it's getting bigger.
Of course,
Brazil's the big one.
Bueno.
Oh, it's wonderful. This is great. So more contacts you have there. Bring them on the show.
I want to tell a lot of Colombia and Costa Rica, Belize, y toda la gente que, I'm going to say a quick message in Spanish. Por favor, no traigan a sus niños a este país porque los están vendiendo este gobierno. I'm saying, don't bring your children. The government is selling your kids. And a lot of these people are not making it. You've seen they found 52 dead illegals in a truck, you know, and they're coming in every day, you know.
Go ahead.
These people pay the coyotes. Now it's $6,000-$10,000 to bring you across, and the cartels are in it with the coyote. They have to get their cut, and a lot of times they don't even bring you all the way across. They kill you. So a lot of these people never make it to America. So it's very sad. To do that to human beings, you know, but they need to stay back in their country.
You know, I've always wanted a Spanish translation or a separate Spanish report of Action Radio. But if you want to call in and do, you know, like 2 minutes of Spanish news, or, you know, in Spanish, you know, feel free. I mean, I think that'd be a good addition to the show.
Yeah,
something to think about. Yeah, yeah. So just or whenever you have a message that you want to give in Spanish, feel free. I think that'd be a great addition
hey,
to our
Greg,
show here.
I was just at an appointment for an ultrasound. I had kidney stone, and I'm
Ooh.
Doing good, and but they did
oh,
find
good.
A small cyst, and they're keeping an eye on it. But I just felt so sad. So many people are wearing the mask, and because they require the mask. I bought this medical park here on 9 Mile. And I'm like, I was the only one without a mask. I said, I'm not putting that crap in my face. No way. No. And I was talking to the girl doing the ultrasound. I said, look, I don't mind if you don't
better.
Wear the mask. Breathe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And hospitals know these things don't work, and yet they enforce it.
I know.
For appearances. It's so funny. Did you ask to see the box where it says – Yeah, if you want to have some fun, get the box of the of blue masks, and I don't know if they still do it, but they used to say does not work against viruses, which is hysterical.
Yeah, it does say it doesn't work. Yes,
yeah.
It does say it on it.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right, let's get back to this case here. This is what is Plyler V. Doe, and this is our Law and Crime article, Dan Abrams production. And let me see if we scroll back up to give our credit to our article writer once again. Lura, E-L-U-R-A, Nanos, N-A, it was probably Nanos maybe? No, there's no little thing there. N-A-N-O-S, May 5th, 2022. And she says, what is Plyler V. Doe? Plyler V. Doe is a 1982 Supreme Court case in which SCOTUS, that's Supreme Court of the United States, for those that don't like acronyms like me, struck down a 1975 Texas state statute that denied funding to public schools for the education of the non-citizen children, in other words, illegal aliens, of undocumented immigrants. Well, they're not immigrants. This is another thing that drives me absolutely crazy. First of all, everybody's documented because everybody has a birth certificate. So the only reason people are undocumented is because they left the documents at home. We know that. Josie's confirmed it. And these people are not immigrants. Immigrants are lawful people who are invited into the country to stay here. You cannot be an undocumented immigrant. You're either an illegal alien or you're a lawful immigrant. There is no other choice. No gray area here. Anyway, the comment goes on. The case also challenged Texas policy of authorizing its local school districts to deny public school enrollment to children not legally admitted to the country. Okay. Well, that's the thing. They did the right thing, right? And then it says to charge families $1,000 per student to compensate for the lost funding due to their enrollment. The case raised an equal protection clause challenge based on Texas's disparate treatment of the children of, and I'm going to say illegal aliens, as compared with that of other children within the state. 5-4 majority sided with the children and against Texas. Well, they sided with illegal aliens, with criminals, is what it really is, and held that Texas had illegally discriminated against the non-citizen children of undocumented immigrants. Let me translate that into English. Texas had lawfully discriminated against illegal aliens, children of illegal aliens. Comments? Who wants in on this?
Well, this is a case, this is an example where the state is going to either have to send the message, we're not going to do it, or mm-hmm. get to the point where they say, we're not going to do it.
See, they should have just done it. They should have kept the funding. Yeah, yeah. They should have,
This is another case. See, mm-hmm. This is like, this is the R. Kelly. Well, you're giving these girls money to buy designer clothes, giving these girls, these underage girls, money to buy tennis shoes and shoes and clothes. Then you are stipulating to them they have to do this, usually mm-hmm. sexual, with an adult, if you want to continue to get nice things. That's what the Supreme Court is saying. If you want to continue getting this Department of Education money, you got to do mm-hmm. these things, which are unconstitutional.
See, I don't think the funding was actually mentioned.
Tell them to go to hell.
Yeah, you raise a good point, but I don't think Department of Education funding was the issue. I think they said that Texas cannot, quote, discriminate against criminals, which, of course, is the same.
It is the issue because those school districts are participating in certain entitlements. Title
okay.
One, free and reduced lunches, and so on and so on. So,
right,
yeah, that's
sense.
What you call the soft power. That is described as soft power, and they hold that over your head. Hillary Clinton used that term many times, soft power.
Wow. Yeah. No, it's interesting that, I think Texas should just rebel. It's the Supreme Court had no authority to make that decision. That was, in fact, an illegal decision, just as Roe v. Wade was an illegal decision. No state was bound by it. First of all, the court can't make law. They can't make regulation. They can't make policy. Given that, there was no reason for Texas to go along with this decision. But even in my own county here in Santa Rosa County in Florida, and I gotta tell you, I'll tell Josie this. I was at a meeting with our school superintendent, I believe Karen Barber's here. And so we were there, and we talked about this. I said, wait a minute, you know, I asked her point blank in front of the whole meeting, do we have illegal aliens in our school? And she says, we can't ask. I said, why not? They're criminals. Why can't you ask? Well, the Supreme Court said. I said, but they have no jurisdiction. They have no jurisdiction to say that you can't ask if you have a legal alien in your school. They can't make policy. They can't do that. Of course, and then all the minions, you know, got up and said, well, the Supreme Court said. I said, I don't give a damn what the Supreme Court said. They have no power here. I said, I don't want you allowing illegal aliens in our school. What are you going to do about it? Well, the Supreme Court said, you know, and it all comes back to this Plyler v. Udoe decision. So it's hiding behind it so they can get more money, more students, and more schools. And of course, the teachers' unions are happier too because they have more students, which means more money for them, more teachers, more dues. So this is a money-making thing, too. So I agree with you there. I just didn't think that the Department of Education or any kind of federal funding in this decision. That's why I questioned it. But it makes sense what you're saying. All right, let me get some more comments from the panel, and I shall I shall continue on. More comments?
You can continue.
Okay. This is something Bianchi's going to like. I found this, and I'm going over this in the EPA decision, West Virginia versus the EPA. So the West Virginia governor said, and I read this earlier in the show, I applaud the Supreme Court's decision today in West Virginia, the EPA, Justice. The governor of Virginia is Jim Justice. And I just imagine if he gets on the Supreme Court, he'll be Justice, which could be really interesting. Anyway, he says, the ruling in favor of West Virginia will stop unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. from being able to unilaterally decarbonize our economy just as they feel like. Now, here's the key part. Here's the part where I said, which I found the most interesting. He says, Justice noted that in his state, it's one of the few in the nation, and the quote is, where all agency regulations, those would be federal regulations, must be approved by a vote of the state legislature before they take effect. And he's happy to see the federal government, you know, following a similar model. But think about that. West Virginia, no federal regulation is allowed in West Virginia until the state legislature approves it. And why don't all the states do that? Panel?
Well, they should. That's getting back to the points where the states are saying, hell no.
Yeah, I thought you'd like it. That's why I brought it up.
And maybe I could just alter my words. You have these countries of telling the federal government, hell no. Because that's what they are. They are countries.
Well, what if we started calling them? What if we started calling the Republic of Texas, the Republic of North Carolina? What if we start calling it the Nation of Florida? What if we get rid of the word state?
Well,
state implies a subordinate.
Why are you paying your own state legislature, then at the same time you're paying these federal legislatures to go against what you're paying your own country's legislature? It doesn't make sense. You're paying twice and getting nothing.
No, I agree. No, but and in fact, that's almost double taxation because you're paying your nation and then you're paying, you know, a federal government that has limited powers, you know, between the nations of the United States. This is going to be interesting. We start calling them nations. Well, let's watch what happens over time. It's going to be fast because we're changing language here all the time.
Those states are countries. Before they joined the home to become the United States, they were independent countries. Mm-hmm. And they even written up in the Constitution as being sovereign. So why don't we call them what they are? And I think that would help put it in the mind of people what they should be saying rather than what they are doing presently now, which is producing havoc.
Yeah, I'm going to make a language change. I'll start calling it the Nation of Florida. We'll see what happens. Josie?
She's funny.
Hey, listen, you change language, you change everything. If we start saying the Nation of Florida, when do I get DeSantis on the thing? I was talking about the Nation of Florida. He's like, Greg, what the hell are you talking about? No, we're a nation. We're a sovereign nation within the United Nations of the United States. You know,
hey,
this is the only part of the word nation.
We can just name anything we want. Look, international airport here in Pensacola, and it's funny because international means you're going to get flies from other countries, and we don't have such a thing here. So I don't know who in the world came up with that name.
No, I'll tell you what it means. It actually is the amount of passengers. It's a designation of the amount of passengers that an airport handles. Once you reach over a certain level of passengers per year, you get the designation international, regardless of whether there are any actual international flights.
There's no international flights here at all, so I never heard of such a thing.
We don't have a Mexico. There's no Belize. I can't go visit Alan Dawson in Belize, our tour guide friend. You know, we can go down there for lunch.
Not from Pensacola. It doesn't go straight on.
I'll fly us ourselves.
To go to Georgia or Miami or somewhere else in order to catch another flight.
I'll buy
but
a
you know,
Learjet.
Greg, like you were saying, that you were at that school and you ask a question and all that, and they refuse. The reason they don't want us to know what they're doing with our tax dollars. When my daughter was in college and I'm paying out of pocket for her to go to college, and I called because she was not doing too good and I wanted for her to get out of school, they said, no, I'm sorry, we cannot give you no information at all. I said, excuse me, I'm paying for her tuition for her to go to school. And they refused to give me any information. They had to have permission from my daughter. And of course, kids don't want to give permission for the parents to know that they're doing bad in school. You know,
well, if you're paying the freight, that's one thing. But also, which is interesting, that your daughter's an adult. I mean, 18-year-olds are adults. And so I always have a little issue with – but what I'm saying is, though, that, you know, you're paying the freight, so you should know. However, you know, and I would say – but if she was paying herself, then you may not have a right to know certain things because she's an adult.
Of course,
she's cheating
her
way.
Not.
Exactly. No, that makes a difference. No, I understand that. But we talk about that with with the when Anthony Nunez used to be on. In fact, if we ever gather all our bill writers together, you know, when Trump calls us, and I'm going to line all you guys up, everybody that's written a bill, Pianchi, Josie, Anthony, Dr. Pryor's written a bill, Jonathan's written a bill, anybody who's written a bill, I want to get you all on the show. You know, this is my goal. This is one of my little secret plans. You know, when President Trump does call, so I know ahead of time, and I'm not, I'm not going to tell anybody when this is going to happen. It's just going to be like a real surprise kind of thing, because I don't want
Mama
the phone lines jamming
up.
Well, it's interesting. Well, actually, I've got. Do you know who we had on the show yesterday? I don't know if you heard yesterday's show. We had Brandon House. Brandon House is best friends with Mike Lindell. Brandon House produced those election documentaries. Listen to the show yesterday. It was an hour and a half. We're in. It's only a matter of time. We're going to get Mike Lindell.
You mean,
yesterday
was the doctors at 10.
Yeah, but it was more than, the doctors is more than the doctors. I bring in a bunch of different guests. We've had marketing people. We've had psychological stuff. We're going to have future guests. And you know who I want to get on is Gregory Wrightstone, who's the climate geologist. Because we were talking about, you know, that we have to cut down the population because we're running out of resources. You know, the air is bad. And I want to bring him on and go, well, the air is fine. What's your problem? So the Thursday panel gets there. You know, we have John Cullen, who's the data expert. He's the one that came up with the map for Johns Hopkins University on COVID. I mean, that guy knows numbers. Like, he's got stats and numbers like nobody.
Man,
very
he has
panel.
Some awesome guy. I forgot his name. This guy talking about Bible and all that. That was very good.
Was that yesterday?
I forgot his name. Was,
Brandon. Yeah, Brandon House. Yeah, you heard the show. That's right. So that's Brandon House.
Oh,
again, best
you.
Friends
that's,
with Mike Lindell.
I didn't know the whole thing because I had customers, but in between.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, well, that's why we do podcasts. All right, let me get back to the case here.
Yeah.
So the filer.
I'm going to continue listening. Because I got up super, super early and I have a long day ahead of me here. And I'm going to sleep for 40 minutes in the store.
Okay.
Did you see that video I sent you, Josie?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I have seen stuff like that, yes.
Isn't that something else?
That's what they're doing.
The rest of the audience in on what you're talking about.
All
guys. This is our private message service.
We sent her a video of a late-term abortion.
It was ugly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, ugly. Yeah. You don't want to.
You know,
that.
And I remember the comment I made on the news. Well, thanks, Josie. I appreciate you being here. I made that comment on Facebook. And I said, you know, whenever there's a story about the Second Amendment, they always show guns. You know, whenever there's a story about COVID, good or bad, they always show people getting a vaccination. You know, but whenever they do a story on abortion, they never actually show an abortion. You know, there's a mistreatment.
That's
of the
right.
And they do that on purpose.
You hit on a good point.
Yeah.
You hit on a good point.
You're right.
Yeah. So if you're going to do an abortion story, show an abortion.
if more people saw that video, then they would understand what the heck is being done.
What they're doing.
Well, that's why this is why ultrasound, we talked about this earlier with Lindsay when she was on, ultrasound changed the abortion debate, because all of a sudden millions of people who were convinced, you know, the clump of cells is not, it hasn't developed into a human yet, so it's not going to feel pain, it's not a big deal. Okay. All of a sudden, you know, millions upon millions of people look at that and wait a minute, this ultrasound just made you a liar, you know, so I'm not going to believe that anymore. Yeah. And I think that was a major shift, you know, into people going pro-life when they suddenly realized that everything they've been told by the pro-choice crowd was a lie. And it's like, wait a minute, that is a baby.
True.
I can see it right there. That's a baby. That's a human being. No, I don't like abortion anymore. Yeah. No, that's not right. You know, and that's what changed everything. It was fascinating. You know, in fact, that is probably the single greatest technological advance in terms of pro-life that there was ultrasound. All right.
Mm.
Back to this.
God bless you. I'm going to hang up. I'm going to continue.
God bless you too.
In my sleep.
Sounds good.
Bye. Right.
Be careful, Josie. Goodbye.
Nah, take chances and have fun. That's what I do. All right. Plyler v. Doe. The 5-4 opinion was authorized by Justice William Brennan, the most liberal member of the court ever, and joined by Justices Thurgood Marshall, Harry Blackmun, Lewis Powell, and John Paul Stevens. And the dissenters, Chief Justice Berger, Justice Byron White, there we go, William Rehnquist, and Senator Day O'Connor. This must be before Rehnquist was Chief Justice. Anyway, because, Warren Berger, the Berger Court, you hear about the Warren Court, the Berger Court, the Rehnquist Court, and now he's got the Roberts Court, which is, Roberts is terrible. That guy should have just stuck to his GQ modeling. You know, go do magazines, dude. You know, just don't bother us on the court. All right. The article says the Plyler majority specifically found, and this is where it gets interesting. All right, the Plyler majority specifically found that the 14th Amendment guarantees equal protection under the law to all people within the United States, and that undocumented aliens, in other words, illegal aliens, are people. Let's talk about that. And I said this earlier in the show that they take a premise that's true and use that for a decision that's not true, or an opinion that's not true. The truth is, undocumented aliens, illegal aliens, are people. I don't think anybody disputes that. But does that mean that under the 14th Amendment, they're guaranteed equal protection and constitutional rights? And the answer is no. And I can prove it because of the subject of the jurisdiction clause. In fact, I proved it earlier. So just in case anybody missed it, let me go over that one more time. And then we shall take opinions of our panelists. We got Pastor Don, we got Pianchi. And so let me just repeat this one more time. Probably the most critical part of any of our amendments, the 14th Amendment says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Which means if they are subject to another jurisdiction, a citizenship jurisdiction. This isn't about geography. This is about citizenship because it talks about persons born or naturalized in the United States. Well, that can't be geographic. You know, well, I mean, obviously it isn't in the United States, but the jurisdiction they're talking about is citizenship. And this is where the left has confused people because they say, well, born or naturalized in the United States, anybody born on U.S. soil is a United States citizen. Not true. Because the citizenship jurisdiction predominates here. Yes, somebody may be born physically on the United States soil, but that does not make them a citizen if their parents are subject to the jurisdiction of another country. Pretty simple, huh? So the Supreme Court says they specifically found that the 14th Amendment guarantees equal protection under the law to all people within the United States. That is not true. It does not guarantee constitutional rights and protections to all people. It guarantees constitutional rights and protections to Americans fully, and some rights and protections to lawful immigrants, but they cannot serve on a jury and they cannot vote. And that's pretty simple. Pianchi?
Well, you're absolutely right.
I love hearing that.
Of the nation,
I love what he says, but, yeah.
And they're citizens of the country, quote, state. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. Let's take the country of Nigeria. Nigeria consists of many countries called states. Mm-hmm. You got Ondo State, you got Igbo, you got Dagra up in the north. So those are actually little countries. They got their own language, they got their governor, so on and so on, but they are member of the nation of Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So what you see here in the United States is actually mimicking what goes on in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They just use a different terminology. And I think the word state has become accepted, but I think it has been misappropriate because you're talking about countries. Before they came the 13 states in the founding period of time, they were individual countries.
They were colonies at one point. They were subject to British law. They were subject to the British Army. They were subject to having soldiers quartered in their homes. They were subject to all kinds of things because they were subjects. They weren't even citizens. They were subjects of the British Crown. You know, it's interesting. Remember the comment I made earlier that I put this on Facebook too, that everybody knows that black Americans were enslaved, but they forget that white Americans were colonists, that they were subjects. So freedom, you know, granted different times, you know, for freeing the slaves versus freeing the nation. But the fact that everybody in this country,
slave,
you know, comes from a subjugated person.
Slave has been misconstrued. Yeah. You know that the word slave has been misconstrued. In the country where they came from, it wasn't derogatory in all cases as it is today, like I told you before. A man who marries a female in some of those countries over there, that female and her children are his property, not in a derogatory a matter like we look at it here in the States. In their society, that's what they was labeled.
Well, that's also his responsibility to preserve and protect, too. You know, property can have different connotations. You know, it's like stewardship. You know, if we own the land, we're still responsible for being good stewards of it. And that doesn't mean, you know, slashing, burning, polluting, and things like that. So just because, so property connotes ownership, but it also connotes responsibility. And I think that's part of the definition that's missing. And I bet you, you know, in fact, you can look further into this and find out if you know, when, you know, wives and children are considered property, they're really considered, you know, also that part of that is the responsibility that goes along with this. I don't think that's, I think people forget that.
Right.
That,
the responsibility
that part of it
goes with it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. So it's like when we talked about Brazil, I learned this last night. In Brazil, you know, they don't consider unborn children as property of the mother. They are gifts to the woman, but they are separate beings. And so the idea of abortion in Brazil, you know, it's inconceivable, if you'll excuse the pun, because they don't think of it because the baby is a separate person automatically. You know, so it's a very different thing. I'm going to skip it. That recording was fascinating. All right, let me get back to what Brennan, you know, if you know the Justice Brennan Center in New York, it's the most liberal Marxist political place probably in the country. And she says, this is our article writer in Law and Crime, says Brennan's words left little room for doubt on the matter. Well, of course, Brennan cannot say what he said because he's basically subverted the Constitution. But Brennan said, Texas argues at the outset that undocumented aliens, which we know as illegal aliens, because of their immigration status, well, actually it's their criminal status, are not, quote, persons within the jurisdictions of the state of Texas. And that's not what they argued at all. They not said they weren't persons. They said they were criminals. You know, so you see how Brennan has completely distorted the argument. So let me read it again, then I'll translate it. Texas argues at the outset that undocumented aliens, because of their immigration status, are not persons within the jurisdiction of the state of Texas, and that they therefore have no right to the equal protection of Texas law. Reject this argument. Well, first of all, it's an invalid argument. And when they take something true and totally screw it up, right? So he says, whatever his status under the immigration laws, an alien is surely a person in any ordinary sense of that term. Aliens, even aliens whose presence in this country is unlawful, have long been recognized as persons guaranteed due process of law by the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments. Well, everything said is a bunch of crap. That's simply not true. All right. Well, and then even the Supreme Court recognized persons guaranteed rights. It doesn't mean that they're guaranteed rights. So they take something that is true, illegal aliens are persons, and translates it to something that's not true, that therefore being in the United States gives them constitutional rights. I'll point out the prelude to the Constitution. Although the prelude is not the law, it says very simple, we the people of the United States. It doesn't say we the people in the United States. It says we the people of the United States. And the only people of the United States are United States citizens. Those are the people of the United States. Okay. Now, as a lawful immigrant, as someone who was here as a permanent resident, I was not of the United States. I was a guest. You know, I had permanent status, but I was a guest. Very clear distinction. And once I became a citizen, now I'm of the United States. Okay. That's the whole point of becoming a citizen. Now I'm under the Constitution. Now I get full constitutional rights. William Brennan totally screws that up. When he says that because people are persons, which is obvious, that somehow they're entitled to constitutional protections is a lie. And that lie is the Plyler v. Doe. And on that basis, Clarence Thomas and the other justices, I think, could easily overturn this by using the argument I made. Yes, of course they're persons. We're not challenging whether they're persons. But the fact is that persons who can't be here can't have rights. I don't know how the left is going to dispute that except to lie, like they did in this case. How do you fight that argument? How can anybody fight the argument that a person cannot have rights in the United States if they cannot be in the United States? Well, if you can't be here, there's no point in giving you rights because you can't exercise them anyway. So how can you be covered by rights if you can't be here? That's an irrational argument. That's an insane argument. And yet that's the argument that William Brennan, a supposedly learned justice who knows more than me, but apparently not, that's the argument he made. He says whatever the status of the immigration person, it doesn't matter their immigration status. Well, it does matter their status. First of all, illegal aliens have no immigration status because they're not immigrants. So there's a lie. You know, and just being within the jurisdiction of the state of Texas doesn't make them, you know, they're still subject to the jurisdiction of their country because they can't be here. Pianki, go ahead. I think I'm circling now.
Well, the country of Texas should have told him right then and there, no, mm-hmm. you're wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But they didn't.
You're wrong.
They didn't. See, people have this belief that the Supreme Court can interpret the Constitution and can make constitutional law simply by their opinions. And neither of those things is true. I don't know how we fight that, but I'm going to try. And here the article goes further. It says, once the court found that the 14th Amendment applied, that in itself was wrong. So there's their wrong premise. So they start with the premise that illegal aliens are people, which of course is true. Then they say that because they're people, they're part of the United States and they're part of the Constitution. That's not true. And then they said, once they take something that's not true, they found even further something that's not true. And she says, once the court found that the 14th Amendment applied, it next turned to applying constitutional analysis to Texas laws. Okay, well, you can't find that the 14th Amendment applies because it says subject to the jurisdiction, too. We've already proven that. Okay, so you cannot apply the 14th Amendment. So any analysis that applies the 14th Amendment is automatically wrong because they apply it and it can't be applied. I don't care what their analysis is. And then it says, in its analysis, this is the Supreme Court, of whether the plaintiff group of children, undocumented immigrants, in other words, illegal aliens, constituted a suspect class deserving of heightened scrutiny, the court considered what it called a shadow population of illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, they're calling them migrants here, numbering in the millions within our borders. Says Brennan noted that this shadow population exists because of lax enforcement of immigration laws, encouraged by some to remain here as a source of cheap labor. The existence of such an underclass presents more difficult problems for a nation that prides itself on adherence to principles of equality under law. Well, we do pride ourselves under equality under law, but that doesn't include people who aren't legally allowed to be here. You know, that applies to people under the Constitution. And then, so what he's saying is because we have millions of illegal aliens, we have to accommodate them in our schools because we haven't enforced the illegal alien laws properly. Well, there's no justification. You can't base the Constitution on the fact that a bunch of people are already here illegally. That's like saying if everybody robbed a bank, would it make it legal? No. It's still illegal. Doesn't matter how many people do it. This is really twisted logic. Pianki? Oh, he's making noise. I mean, it's Pastor Don.
That's true. But like I said before, you can just about sell anything to an ignorant people. And like we may mention, the country of Texas, whether it's the country of Florida, mm-hmm. The country of Missouri should tell the court, say, nope, you're wrong. We're not going to do it.
Yeah. I got 2 minutes left. I wanted to get two more paragraphs that really sum this up. She says, this is the article, the high court, however, was unwilling to confer the label of suspect class to its group of children, although they should have, and reasoned that, quote, their presence in this country in violation of federal law is not a constitutional irrelevancy. Well, of course it's a constitutional relevancy, you idiots. If you're in this country and violate federal law, you can't be granted rights. Give me a break. Then it says, still, Brennan's majority was clearly troubled by Texas' intention of denying illegal aliens, not immigrant children, an education. Well, of course you deny them an education. In our country, they're not entitled. They're entitled to an education in their own country, not ours. Then he says he wrote that Texas law imposes a lifetime hardship on a discrete class of children not accountable for their disabling status, and argued that the stigma of illiteracy will mark them for the rest of their life. So in other words, they always intended that illegal aliens would always stay here. That's incorporated into the decision. That's critical to understand that they wrote this so illegal aliens would get an education because they're not leaving. Okay, I got a minute left. Let me just finish this. He says, Brennan says, by denying these children a basic education, we deny them the ability to live within the structure of our civic institutions and foreclose any realistic possibility that they will contribute in even the smallest way to the progress of our nation. Illegal aliens cannot contribute to the progress of our nation. Illegal aliens cannot be here. So what he's really saying is we have to educate illegal alien kids because once they're here, we're not going to get rid of them. They're part of our society. Screw you. You have to accept that. That's what William Brennan said. You got the last 40 seconds, Pianchi.
Where they came from, they weren't under our jurisdiction. They, mm-hmm. They've maintained that status even when they came here.
Yeah.
It says, of the United States, not in the United States, as you forementioned.
Mm-hmm. Almost out of time. I'm going to post this article again. It'll be in the Action Radio Legal Group. I'll put it on the Action Radio Group, which is our news site. I'll put it on my Facebook page again. This is a fascinating article because of how wrong it is. And once you know how to read it, you'll see how wrong it is. I'm going to talk about this case. I want to talk about this with Jonathan on Monday. And we're also going to talk about the EPA case. We're not done with the Supreme Court. This is my favorite time of year because we have all these Supreme Court cases. But we are out of time. Pastor Don, thanks for calling and listening. Pianchi, thank you for everything. I really appreciate you being on the show as much as you are. And let's do it again Monday, July 4th. We are here. I haven't quite figured out exactly how we're going to do things, but we will have a reading of the Declaration of Independence in the second hour. First hour is mine. And the third hour, we've got Angie Carter with campaigns. What do we call it? Campaigns, contributions, corruption. It's going to be interesting. Greg Penglis for Action Radio. It's been an unbelievable week once again. And our show site, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative site is www.writeyourlaws.com. If you want to help sponsor the show, I'll make you a commercial. And if you want to just contribute, we've got paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. And that works for our folks who are doing commercials for it too. And I will see you next week, 7 a.m. on July 4th, and that's Central Time.